trigger that recirculation. And if you would like, we can send an email out to each of you with the outcome.
That would be great. Thank you.
Okay, you bet.
Anything else? I have one item, and it's Commissioner Melskow and I were just chatting about it briefly before our meeting. Before us, over the past year, we've had, you know, sewer plant difficulties, areas with sewer difficulties, and yet we have at least Morro Bay and Cayucas discussing the idea of a, quote, regional concept. And we have certainly, or I have certainly wondered why we haven't looked at that concept for a lot of the other areas. Los Osos certainly comes to mind. Pismo Beach is always in the newspaper for whatever reason. And I don't, you know, I'm not sure that we have enough information or anything, but part of our role, I think, is to recommend to the board areas that we might like them to think about and to at least discuss. And, you know, that particular concept really seems to me to be quite timely. I don't know how staff or other commissioners feel, but I'd be interested in knowing.
Just wanted to point out that Templeton and Paso Robles have a common sewer interest. The original sewering of Templeton was done with a regional concept using the Paso Robles sewer plant, and now Templeton is kind of a 50-50, their own and using Paso.
Other commissioners? Mr. Hope, do you have any response to my suggestion? Did you understand my suggestion?
Would you mind just...
I don't mind repeating it at all. Yeah, I guess I would be interested if other commissioners would support at least some communication to the board that the concept of a regional sewer facility be investigated to handle the areas that are, of all the ones we have, they're all in some type of difficulty. And the Monterey Peninsula is an excellent example of a very large regional project that is at least attempting to address their problems.
That's certainly an appropriate matter that your commission could offer its advice to the board on. And what we would have to do is, well, you should do it in the form of a commission letter, if that's what you want to do. And we would need to schedule consideration of a board letter for that purpose as a discrete agenda item on a subsequent agenda, which we could do probably fairly quickly. So the question would be, would the commission like the chair to work with staff to do a draft letter beforehand, or would you like to discuss the contents of the letter at that subsequent meeting and then have it prepared and brought back again?
I'd prefer a discussion, because if we're going to make a recommendation to the board, I think we ought to, you know, have some public input in terms of what we're talking about.
We can schedule it as a discussion item if that's your commission's desire.
Right. Is that
and hopefully Public Works could give us their opinions and expertise, because I could think of some that, you know, make a lot of sense and others that makes absolutely no sense, and I bet they've thought that out.
Yeah, I honestly didn't hope to see this become a major, big-blown item. It's an area that I believed was worthy of further discussion, and I do see our role. No one come forward.
I'll second Ms. Christie's motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Would the secretary please introduce the first item?
Item 1 is a hearing to consider a request by the California Department of Parks and Recreation for a development plan coastal development permit, county file number DRC 2006-00099, and Dan Nemechek is our project manager.
Madam Chair, if I might, before we begin the item, I would like to formally introduce Dan Nemechek to the commission. Dan is one of our more recent hires. He's a planner on the coastal team, and this is his first appearance before the Planning Commission, and I'm sure you'll both find it a rewarding experience.
Thank you, and welcome.
Well,
Yeah, I can see what he's got big works on his first item here.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners. Dan Nemechek with County Planning. The first item before you today there's been a memo to request that it be moved and continued off calendar as it required a minor use permit. The conditions of approval associated with Montaña de Oro general plan specifically outlined projects that should receive minor use permit approval. It was discovered later that this was one of those projects, and it has been continued to the June 15th Planning Department hearing agenda.
Thank you. Any questions of staff? This was a public hearing. Does anyone in the audience care to address us on this issue? Seeing no one, I bring it back to the commission.
So I would move to continue off calendar.
Is there a second to the motion? It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Wait a minute.
Did you have a comment? I'm sorry.
I did. You know, are we really continuing it off calendar, or are we going to... I'm not sure the correct words for this. It sounds like they have a specific date for a hearing, and which means there's a specific date by which people need to submit their comments in writing or phone call or to make sure that they can actually have a public hearing. Maybe you could go into some detail about that.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Rose, the project will be noticed. I'll have a mailed public notice for the Planning Department hearing. I'm not sure if that specifically answers your question as far as language for today, but I will defer to someone else.
Jeff, the process that they will go through is if someone wants a hearing on the item, they will need to respond in writing, I believe, by a certain date. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair. That date would be June 8th by 4:30.
And staff's recommendation was to continue this off calendar. Is that how you'd like us to handle it?
Actually, may I weigh in on this?
Please.
This actually now has simply been removed from your commission's jurisdiction. It's a minor use permit. So you don't really need to do anything. But because we noticed it, we had to put it on the agenda and we had to open the hearing. Actually, the best action is no action. If you want to do a motion to just acknowledge that the project will be considered through another process, you can do that.
Okay.
Would the maker of the motion care to restate the motion, refine, redo?
Well, or just rescind it if no motion is necessary. So just rescind.
Okay, and the second?
I withdraw my second.
All right. No action needs to be taken on this item. Would the secretary please introduce item number 2?
Item number 2 is a hearing to consider request by the California Department of Parks and Rec for a development plan coastal development permit. County file number DRC 2006-00030, and Dan Nemechek is project manager.
All right. Good morning again. Dan Nemechek with Planning and Building. Briefly, my presentation today will begin with a brief overview of the project description, site orientation, and we'll conclude with staff's recommendations. The request before you today is a request from California State Parks for a development plan coastal development permit for the installation of a modular resource office of approximately 960 square feet at W.R. Hearst State Beach. The project would also include placement of approximately 150 cubic yards of fill and installation of landscaping. Here is a vicinity map to review. It shows the location of William R. Hearst Memorial State Beach in the San Simeon area. Here's a land use category map. As you can see here, the property is zoned recreation land use category. There is a sensitive riparian vegetation area, which is over on the far, this would be northwest portion of the site. The proposed development is a significant distance away from this area. Here's an aerial image of the site. The proposed development would be in this general area, as outlined by the arrow. The environmental determination for this project was done by the California State Parks. They issued a Class 3 categorical exemption, acting as, the lead agency, as provided under CEQA. And staff recommends that you approve the Development Plan Coastal Development Permit, DRC 2006-30, based on the findings in Exhibit A and subject to the conditions of approval listed in Exhibit B. That concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions. And there is a representative from State Parks here as well.
Does anyone have questions? Hearing none, this is a public hearing. Does anyone wish to address the commission on this item? Since no one come forward, I'll bring it back to the commission for comments or action.
My only comment would be that these structures look kind of like the structures that are there already, not too good. So the only question I had would be, is there a simple way to just dress these structures up a bit with some dormers or a little cutesy cupola or something that could be added to the top? I know the landscaping will eventually obscure most of the buildings, and I also recognize that this will sit behind the current museum building.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Wyatt, I will defer to Mike Walgren with California State Parks.
Please give your name for the record. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, thank you for having us. My name is Mike Walgren with California State Parks. And to answer your question, our plan at this point was to have it, it's very obscure, as you mentioned, and to have it painted brown to be completely hidden. And basically, we want to hide the thing, not bring a lot of attention to it, but we're certainly open to anything feasible.
I guess that was just my one comment, that a few little roof alterations or something at the top to give it a little more character than just the standard shed could help quite a bit and not cost a lot or take a lot of effort.
We're certainly open to anything like that. I don't know what that would be.
Well, I didn't go as far as drawing some dormers. Well, I did sketch them out, but I would hesitate to show those sketches to anyone. But it seemed just a couple of dormers could go a long way. But I also don't want to add unreasonable cost to the project either, or I'm not in a position to determine that there shall be two dormers, 26 inches wide times 36 inches high. But are other commissioners interested in this? It seemed like a fairly simple way to make blah a little.
I certainly wouldn't be so bold to suggest how, but you're right, those buildings are kind of like plain vanilla things, but I can't find it right now, but I thought this is kind of like a temporary use. This has got something to do with the development of
the new acquisitions that were purchased from the Hearst.
Right, and I presume eventually that project will finish, and then will this building go away at that time? Or?
No. It's not a temporary use facility. It's a modular unit.
Right, but sooner or later the plans, the development will be done.
Correct.
Are you just going to then perhaps convert it to a different use?
I would anticipate that there will always be need for office space, and it would be used.
So it's not a temporary use.
One could comment about the bureaucracy, but we'll leave that alone.
Not go too far. It's not proposed as a temporary use, even though it's a modular building.
Right.
So if the other commissioners would join me, I would like to recommend that we see some roof detail or some minor effort to give it a small bit of charm.
Sure, I understand that, but then now is it going to look out of place with the existing building there?
Sorry?
Would it look, okay, let's dress this one up, put a fancy skirt on it, but the blue jeans next door to it are going to look now a little out of place.
Well, there's always the risk when you repaint the old buildings that you didn't paint, you know, look that much shabbier, but I don't think it does us harm to make the newer one a little more decent.
You know, Commissioner Wyatt's point is well taken, and this is a state park, and it does see a significant amount of public visitation throughout the year, and it's certainly located in a visually spectacular area. State Parks has indicated its willingness to do some, you know, modest design improvements to the facade, and I think it would be worth the minor effort and expense that it would take to see that happen. I don't know if staff could come up with some quick conditions or language, or if you want to, you know, trail this till the end of the meeting today. And
oh.
Is there a motion on this item?
Yes. With that, I would move that we approve development plan DRC 2006-00030 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions limited, conditions listed in Exhibit B, including the change to Condition 4 as read by staff.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Commissioner Malsko?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Chairperson Rapa?
Yes. All right. Will our secretary please introduce item number 3?
Item number 3 is a hearing to consider a request by SAMI for a vesting tentative tract map and conditional use permit. It is located in the community of Templeton, county file number SUB 2005-00052. Josh Lombard is the project manager.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. I'm Josh Lombard, Planning Department staff planner. Before you today is a request for a tract map and conditional use permit to allow the development of 10 residential units totaling approximately 21,500 square feet on a 3.3-acre property which is composed of 5 underlying parcels. The request is also to subdivide a 40,606-square-foot parcel, one of the 5 underlying parcels, into 10 parcels ranging in size from approximately 3,000 square feet to a little over 5,000 square feet each. The property is located at 1315 Las Tablas Road, which is southwest of Twin Cities Community Hospital in the community of Templeton. The property is located within the office and professional land use category, as shown on the land use category map in front of you. And as depicted in this aerial image, the site is currently developed with one medical office, which is located in the northeast portion of the lot. And as shown in this photo right here, there is an improved road, which was improved with a previous tract map on that site as well, which wasn't shown in the aerial image. The proposal is to develop 10 detached single-family residential units as shown on the site plan. Those residential units are approximately 2,100 square feet each and are on, like I said earlier, on sites of 3,000 to 5,000 square foot each. This is a depiction of the proposed elevations for the residential units. And this is the proposed landscaping plan indicating the future screening of the site once the vegetation's mature. Just to provide a little bit of background on the site, as I mentioned earlier, there was a previous tract map which was approved in April of 2005, which subdivided the lot into 5 lots. The current proposal is to subdivide lot 3 of that 5-lot tract map, this one right here, into the 10 single-family lots. And late last year, in December of last year, your commission recommended approval to the Board of Supervisors for a general plan amendment affecting this particular site. And on March 13th of 2007, the Board of Supervisors approved the request to amend the land use ordinance to incorporate this subject site into a Salinas River planning area standard that which allows multifamily dwellings as a principal use in the office and professional land use category. And the text incorporated was specifically pertaining to this site, which is shown with the A on this map right here, and in particular this crosshatch section, which represents the parcel that we're talking about today, which the text basically stated that they would allow structurally detached residential units in the office and professional land use category on this site. So it was essentially leading us up to what we're seeing today. With that, staff recommends that we rely on the negative declaration, which was previously adopted in November of 2006, and approve vesting tentative tract map and conditional use permit based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and C and conditions listed in Exhibit B and D. And I also have a few small changes to make on the staff report. As Commissioner Rose, or Commissioner Rose typically does, he goes through these reports with a fine-tooth comb, and he did find a couple corrections, a couple errors that I made in the report. The first one is on the first page, 3-1, and it's under our recommended action section, which is in number 2 of that section. It said, let me, I don't.
One piece or the Wall Street Journal? Or what?
I would have caught that when the CCNRs came through. I assume that's the additional map sheet.
That is the additional map sheet. Thank you.
Additional map sheet should be added there.
The words additional map sheet should be added to that line.
I liked that one.
Other questions of staff?
Sure.
Commissioner Rose?
I had a conversation with Josh just before about wood fencing, and I'm talking about condition 2, which is on page of the conditional use permit, which is on page 311. On 2A, I've gone into some details about the fencing, and it looks like you pretty much quoted what the Templeton Area Design Plan had, and the wood, and then on the southern property line, you talked about except wood, but I understand you were in communications with a neighbor who was concerned about, well, they kind of wanted wood rather than having some sort of fence. So maybe you or the applicant could talk about the kind of fencing that is being proposed and whether that would be okay with the neighbors. And what I don't want to see is exactly what the Templeton Design Plan has an example of, a nice picture on Bethel Road of just plain ordinary fencing that was painted about the time of the Templeton Area Design Plan being built in 91, hasn't been painted since. Looks really ugly, and it makes for that wall sort of a look. As you drive by, you don't see anything but a sidewalk and a wall. And I see them going up all over Templeton, and they make them comply with a design guideline by painting the fence the same color as the house, and then it sits there for 15 years and deteriorates, and they forget to paint it. And so, in my opinion, the more ornate stuccoed masonry, river cobble, stone kind of fences seem to hold up longer, look a little better. Obviously, they're more expensive, but there are wooden fences that look nice, and I'd be interested in the applicant telling us how he's going to meet that. And did you want to say more about what the neighbor called you about last night?
Then the neighbor's actually here right now, so I was going to wait until she spoke regarding that.
Good.
And then I'll, before we recommend any changes, I'll defer to the architect and the agent for the applicant on this particular project just to talk about what they're proposing right now, and then we can recommend changes if necessary at the end.
Okay, the next item I have is condition 2B, again on page 311, incorporation of TAG's recommendations, which seems a bit open-ended. I know you summarized their comments, and unfortunately we don't have a letter or something from them saying exactly what they wanted. I know some of the things, like addition of an oil water sand separator at the drainage outlet, it's my understanding that sort of thing is required by ordinance, and maybe Mr. Marshall could tell us whether that's true or not.
Marshall with Public Works. Any new catch basins within the public right-of-way, we're putting silt sand separators and oil separators in them, and that is per ordinance coming.
So this one would require it by ordinance. We don't need to condition it or anything like that.
I would assume these would all be on-site basins and dealing with on-site water and not public water. So during the plan check, Public Works review of the drainage reports that will be submitted as part of the building permits, I believe our comments would be to incorporate those.
Well, I got confused there. I think this is going to be a private road.
Correct.
Okay. But then you say, oh, public water and private water. Is this public water? Is this private water?
This will all be, everything within the development will be private water. That's my understanding.
Okay. So
unless, I'm sorry.
Is this private water going to require, will the ordinance require the catch basin?
My understanding of that is yes. The NPDES ordinance will require that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, and Mr. Lombard, would you comment about the rest of the tags comments, like additional articulation to set garage door behind building face and then box trees, and which I guess were the two major things
sure.
left?
And we can definitely add that, to that, to condition B, and have it read incorporation of tags recommendations, including the addition of additional articulation to set garage door behind building face, and then also the addition of box trees. And I think maybe we want to just talk about that a little bit more and maybe have the architect comment on that. The box trees typically, when planted, they're providing screening initially, better screening than the smaller trees. But our environmental divisions found that those trees typically don't grow as well and don't last as long as smaller trees because of the constraints.
Mr. Marshall, you said this is going to be private water serving this development? But we've got a letter on page 329 from the Templeton Services District. It's basically a will serve letter for 27 water and 27 sewer units. So
I'm sorry. I think we were speaking of drainage.
Right.
I was thinking of stormwater.
Oh,
I apologize
okay, but
for
they're
that.
Not, they're Templeton Templeton Community Service District is going to provide water.
That would be my understanding.
Okay,
and sewer.
That was my understanding,
yes.
too. I just misunderstood
right.
the discussion there. So
that's our shorthand for drainage stuff.
Right. Okay. Runoff is what I would. So I really wanted to commend staff for going the extra mile to list every single planning standard and every single design guideline that applied to this project, specifically in stating how the project meets those standards. It made it very easy to understand the project. So thank you for that. That's noted and appreciated. I would benefit from a little additional walkthrough. I'm a little murky on the sort of the chronology of this. The way I understand it is we approved a track map, then the board approved an amendment that allowed for a change in the phasing of how the housing was built relative to the additional commercial use, office and professional use of the property. But it's multifamily housing that's allowable in office and professional zoning, correct? Did the board or we earlier do the earlier planning commission do something to specifically allow single family residences to be built in multifamily zoning?
I'll pan back, Cammy, if we can get. Let's see, yeah, let's get the slides back up on there so I can show them. Sure. Thank you. Your commission did recommend approval to the board, and the board did approve the language that stated in the crosshatch area, which is specifically this parcel of the five underlying parcels, that the units could be structurally detached from the commercial or office use on the site. Typically, to allow a structurally detached product in a multifamily category, in an office and professional category, you would need to do a modification of our land use ordinance standards to allow that to happen.
But that's structurally detached from the commercial or office use, which right. clearly this is because that little developed corner up there. But that, in my mind, does not equate to single-family detached residences in the multifamily zoning. I mean, I don't recall if I voted for this amendment or not, but how I read it now as it's written, I would think that it would be interpreted to say, okay, you can have some, you know, duplexes or triplexes or an apartment building or something that's detached from the existing office and profession, you know, the existing development, not additional single-family residences in multifamily zoning.
Well, this Cammy Griffin County Planning staff, again, we're having a semantics issue here. The density of this project is greater than single-family density. Therefore, it is multifamily density. It's just that they're choosing, as part of their design, to offer a detached product instead of an attached product. If your commission wants it to be an attached product, then you can deny this application.
Okay.
And furthermore, staff did address that during the general plan amendment process. The current density on this project is about 11 units, dwelling units per acre, which is above the standard detached single-family product, but it is below what is allowed in our multifamily category. So we struggle with that on a regular basis. This was something that we addressed at the time the general plan amendment went through and acknowledged that the detached product isn't going to get you a multifamily density at its higher end, but it is giving you a density. This product here is giving you a density that's above a typical single-family density.
Okay, thank you.
Since you brought that up, could I just follow up on that? Mm-hmm. Interrupt you to follow up? We do see an allowable density of that would allow 24 units, so we're seeing 10 here. So that was a question I had had. Same thing. I applaud 10 units density is better than we might see otherwise, but it's still well below the maximum allowable in the zone. So a question I had was, I guess, coming back to water. If the zone allows a higher density, I wasn't too clear. It appears Templeton Services District has allocated 27 units of water for the parcel or area, but I wasn't clear then if that also includes the commercial uses or how the water then, is that the limiting factor on this density, or if you can help me there.
Sure. Water is a limiting factor in general in Templeton. I do believe so on this side. I'll defer to the agents for the specific comments on this project, but I believe
we'll have CCNRs. The maintenance of all site features, including the fences, will be covered under the CCNRs. So I think that at least in part addresses that concern of some of those fences along Bethel Road, the single-family home fences that I agree with Commissioner Ruse are built and then never maintained. With respect to oil and sand separators, I believe that it would be covered through the pollution prevention plan, but in either case, we're in full agreement with oil and sand separators, both on the private roads and any on-site drainage facilities. With respect to the box trees, I agree with the Environmental Coordinator's Office, and our landscape architects have preached this to us for years, that the box trees give you a better jump start, but long term, the smaller trees really do a better job. One of my landscape architects equates it to trying to move your 90-year-old grandmother. The trees don't do well long term. The smaller trees will catch up and pass them. With respect to the type of trees, we're looking at coast live oaks, valley oaks, and pines as our predominant tree species, and then locust and crepe myrtles as our accent trees. With respect to the ongoing discussion of attached versus detached, quick clarification, our density calculation indicates that 14 would be allowed on this site based on, Kim, 15 gross units per acre. 14 would be allowed. We are proposing 10. We've had this discussion in front of the Planning Commission in the past, and the situation is perhaps a little better today than it was 5 or 10 years ago, but it still is a very serious issue, and that is litigation associated with condominium projects. We do many condominium projects that are attached. They generally are for larger developers that, quite frankly, self-insure. For a smaller developer, our recommendation generally is if you're doing multifamily, we recommend that it be detached because it significantly reduces the latent defect liability exposure to both our clients and the design professional. And with that, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Are there questions? I believe there was one more question about the Templeton Services District and the water.
Oh, yes. We do have 27 water and sewer units. That is for the entire subdivision, which includes the remaining 4 office and professional sites. So if we assign 10 water units, that leaves us 17 for the remainder of the project, which I think is workable for us. And again, that's for all of the lots, including the office professional lots.
Are you planning on subdividing the other lots similar to this?
No, we're not.
This application?
No. And we would accept a condition to that effect.
Are there other questions of the applicant's representative?
Yes. Mr. Whittle, I'm curious, if you had the water, did you play with some designs where you could up the density? Was there some way you could make the units a little smaller and
certainly
get the 14 on the site?
Certainly for any given site, there's an infinite number of design solutions. Part of the design target buyer for this project is the professional young medical community. Templeton has an influx of young professionals starting their careers. So it's attempting to target a certain market. The direct answer is we started with a program that it was of units of 1,600 to 1,800 square feet. They're 1,750. That yielded the density of 10.
So these, the average square foot on these is 16?
They're 1,750. The 21 or 2,200 that's referenced, that includes the garages and storage.
Any other questions?
Well, I'd just like to continue. I'd like to applaud you. It looks like a beautiful project. The elevations we have in our packet don't do it justice, but what you've shown us here looks very nice. I guess I'd just like to follow up on Commissioner Christie's previous comments that the allowable density is higher, and this does present us with an opportunity to get more and maybe some affordable units. And although I like the look of this, and 10 units an acre or 11 or whatever we're at is better than what we often are. But I'd just like us to discuss maybe the possibility of doing a little better here, where we have an opportunity to maybe get a few more smaller units.
Maybe we can discuss that when we close the public hearing.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I do have one speaker slip on this item. It's Susan Levine. If anyone else wishes to address the commission, there are speaker slips in the back. Please bring them forward. And would you state your name for the record, please?
Good morning. My name is Susan Levine, and I am one of the three residences that are directly impacted by this project. I have some concerns, but before I begin, I'd like to say that due to a glitch in the post office delivery, I did not receive notice, and consequently, I have not been able to peruse type of idea. And since the Peters, the residents on the further east part of the project, as houses for sale and will no longer be concerned personally, I think that the two remaining of us that are impacted would prefer the wood fence, especially since we are guaranteed that it's going to be under the condo thing, and I trust the architect to do beautiful work. I haven't seen the sketch. The other concern I have is noise. The garages are right there. Again, from examples in my neighborhood, not my immediate neighborhood, I've seen that people have used the garages for pool tables and ping pongs and rec rooms and used the street for basketball and good for your tennis and handball. And I was wondering what concern for the noise pollution would be, or what you can help me with this, or with RVs parking there and in long stay, people camping out on the street behind me. And of course, I'm always concerned about air pollution from the noise of any traffic or things like that, or boomboxes. From where I come from, Los Angeles, boomboxes is a big thing. Also, I don't know whether it would impact the resale value of my house or not, but multiple higher density than what's already been proposed seems to me might be. I was hoping to have my paradise forever.
Could you conclude your comments,
please? And that's the end of my comments, and any comments you have to protect us is mostly appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. I think there's one question for you, Commissioner Rose.
I had a question, and I wanted you to look at the sketches Mr. Whittle provided. Maybe you could jump up there and point out the fence, and I'd be interested if you like that idea, and maybe he could show you where.
Do we have another speaker while we're waiting for Mrs. Levine? Go, please move to the other and give your name for the record. That'll be fine. We can pass that in afterwards.
My name is Robert Peters. I live at 356 Eric Lane, and like Susan says, I'm one of the three residences there that is affected by this. This is probably the fifth or sixth meeting that either my wife or myself has attended, and our understanding from the earlier meetings were that the wall itself or the fence was to be a masonry wall. Our main concern there is that with the design of the units and the units on our fence line, having the garages in the back, the fence is coming right up, or the driveways and the streets coming basically right up to our fence line, that the masonry wall would provide better sound dust and such protection. Also, you know, again, with a road being right there, I think a masonry wall would provide better protection should somebody miss a turn and ram into that fence. But, Susan said, our house is up for sale, but that does not mean that we're necessarily going to have it sold. And, so there is no guarantee that we are leaving the area at this point. But, like I said, our understandings from the earlier meetings were that this was to be a masonry wall. That's what we have requested, and that's what we would hope for.
Thank you very much. If you can give your slip to... Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the commission?
Could we have the lady come back and want her opinion now that she looked at the fence that Mr. Whittle pointed out to her, if that was...
Mrs. Levine, would you like to comment on the fence?
Now that you've seen at least a picture of it.
I only hastily looked at it, and my first reaction was, I hope the lattice part is above the 6 feet. That it's a 6-foot fence and then that they added the lattice foot. I would like to see something solid for the first 6 feet.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the commission? Applicant's representative, any final comments?
Final comment with respect to the fence. If the ordinance would allow 6 feet of solid plus the 18 inches of lattice, we would do that. If it doesn't, we'd be happy to eliminate the lattice, go 6 feet solid, and modify the design. We want to be good neighbors. We want to do something that's going to work for ourselves and be consistent with the design, which in my mind is wood. There's no masonry or stone on the project, and something that works for the neighbors. Turning to page 311 of the staff report, conditions of approval, we would recommend in 2A the second sentence be deleted in its entirety, starting with the fence located on the southern property line. I think the first sentence in there really covers the options for all of the fences adequately.
Wait a minute. I'm the Armstrongs. Their concern is, among others, that they say the density is excessive. Okay, so we get density all over the map. But it looks like our big problem is with the fence, and it seems like we can capture some of this noise issues with a slightly higher fence. Looking at this picture, it looked to me less than, and I'm looking right here, and that looks smaller than 6 foot.
I believe the applicant's representative indicated that if it was the desire of the commission to have a 6 foot solid wood fence, that was acceptable.
I'm getting there. You're pushing me. And my understanding of the ordinance is you can put a 6 foot, 6 inch fence with no problems, but if you want to put a 29 foot fence, you got to get a permit. So at this hearing, we could make it any height that we wanted. Am I correct on that?
You can, through your approval of this, set a different standard than the ordinance would otherwise allow, because you're right. It would have to be 6 foot six total, including the lattice work. So we would recommend, as part of that condition 2A, if you're interested in the higher fence, stating that the fence on the southerly property line shall be 6 foot 6 inches in height in solid materials and may extend no more than 18 inches in height using a lattice material.
I think that's reasonable. I don't know whether 6 foot or 6 foot six.
6 foot six is just our standard. I think that's what a fence board comes in. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't build fences.
Before we leave the fence issue, I'd want to hear the rest of the commissioner's viewpoint on that.
Sounds fine. I did just hear, was it the one neighbor talking about the same fence that he wanted to be in masonry? Sir, was that the same fence? So I did hear a recommendation
right
for the masonry wall that might...
So we got one vote for wood and one vote for masonry.
And we're spending all kinds of time on a fence.
And it's important. That's good. It's an important issue, and we should spend time on it. Okay. Because it matters to the neighbors.
Other commissioners have comments?
I guess I'd just ask for next time to know, would the masonry wall then be more sound blocking? If sound, I'm hearing sound as an issue from both neighbors. Would that help a little more with the sound buffer? Does anyone know?
I think that a solid wall will help with noise that's generated below the height of the wall. So anything from, if it's a 6-foot solid wall, anything from 6 feet below, car door shutting, people going into the garages, those type of things, it is going to help in relation to a wood fence to a certain degree. But if it's a solid wood fence, it's still going to be blocking it. And there's also landscaping there, too. So,
you know, the architect pointed out that there's no masonry anywhere else on the project. I'm just concerned that a masonry wall might look like, you know.
Yeah.
A bit out of place. And I think if you made a high fence, helps with the noise. And if you made a high masonry fence, I don't think that would look
like a gulag.
Yeah, right. As opposed to what Cammie proposed.
Well, and sometimes also the masonry, because it's a harder surface, will actually reflect noise differently than the softer surface of wood. So that's also something to take into consideration. It will help a little bit with noise, but a good, strong, solid wood fence will help also a great deal.
Okay, so what I'd push for is what Cammie read for the higher wooden fence, conforming to the design as submitted by the applicant, you know, that style of fence with the lattice work above it, if the rest of the commission would agree to that. I'm seeing heads nodding, yes.
Yep.
So you're 6 foot six solid and then 18 inches of lattice? Is that what?
Right, to a maximum.
Up to 18
yeah.
inches.
Okay.
Are there? Excuse me, Cammie Griffin, County Planning. We wouldn't want suddenly there to be another 6 feet of lattice. That would be odd looking.
Right.
Other comments? Mr. Melskow?
On the fencing? Are we still on the fencing?
I hope not. I hope we've left the fencing.
Okay. Well, if we've left the fencing, yes, then. I guess I just want to bring up this issue of density because we're here, and we do have an opportunity, and we talk about smart planning and smart growth and upping the densities in the urban areas. And we have this opportunity to get maybe a few more units here. We talk about density in terms of smart planning and in terms of providing affordable units. And so, again, I am completely cognizant of the fact that 10 units an acre here or whatever we're at is better than we often see. So I don't want to discount that. But our zoning allows a few more units, and it would be possible, seemingly, to either attach a couple.
And I think the architect's correct that the most obvious market for these homes are the young medical professionals that are working in the area. And young medical professionals, some of them will be wanting a 1,700 square foot, 3-bedroom, 2-bath home, but some medical professionals that can't afford that large of a home or don't have that big of a family starting out would perhaps prefer to buy a 2-bedroom, 2-bath, or even a 2-bedroom, 1-bath home. So I would like the commission to consider keeping the density as it is, but reducing the size and the story on some of these homes that border the existing single-family, single-story homes, thereby making those homes more affordable, addressing the privacy issues, and providing more of a mix of size and style of homes in the development that I think overall would enhance it visually as well as providing a mix, an economic mix of houses on the site. What do you guys think about that?
Other comments from other commissioners?
I appreciate the bonus then that would provide to the neighbors. But I guess in terms of privacy issues then, but I guess I don't see us getting more units out of that.
We wouldn't be. But
we would
be getting some smaller, less expensive houses.
I guess I'd just like to see then as a bonus for the applicants to be able to provide a few more smaller units. So I think we could accomplish the same thing and get a few more smaller units by recommending that those couple of units be some kind of duplex to keep the two stories. But if you look at now, a unit is 2,100 square feet with the garage, that maybe that be split to make two smaller units to make a duplex, for example, of two 1,500 square foot units. I mean, you could make the single structure just slightly larger, so you wouldn't get a lot more mass, but maybe you could get two units out of it.
Then you're not addressing the privacy issues of the existing homeowners, though. You'd have two-story duplexes.
It's true. You would
into her master bedroom.
You're right. You're right. But that would get us maybe more a higher number of more affordable
units.
Or
if the smaller single-family residences were on smaller lots, maybe they could get a few more smaller single-family, single-story residences in there and get a density bonus that way and more mix of homes.
I would point out we had this exact floor plan. You know, this is not a secret. When he came to us with his general plan amendment, this is exactly the project he proposed at that time.
I don't believe Commissioner Watt was on the commission at that time. But
well, you got to look at it from the applicant's viewpoint. You know, he submitted essentially a conditional use permit at the time he asked for a general plan amendment. He was very upfront about this is what I plan, this is what I intend to do.
Right. I would just suggest, yes, sorry, I did miss out on that, so I'm not privy to the conversation that happened then. But we're going to see inclusionary housing ordinances come before us, and we haven't even addressed affordability here in this discussion. And I think we need to be. At some point soon, I hope we're going to be demanding it and requiring it. Right now, I haven't even asked the question yet, are any of these affordable? Because I basically know the answer. At 2,150 square feet, they're not. And we have nothing to require it. But right now, we could ask these applicants to make a couple of these units smaller. I'm willing to offer them more units. I think that's something, a bonus we can offer them, so we're not taking away from them. But that provides the people who can afford the home of this size an opportunity to maybe start with something smaller. And they could do it by really not adding to the mass all that much of the structures by attaching a few. Or again, I think it would be possible with this space to make it work to keep them detached and make a couple smaller.
As I've said before, being in the advisory group had some advantages over being in the Planning Commission because we got in very early and we could say, you really ought to do this. You know, by the time we get here, this is kind of the project, and it's kind of a, I wouldn't say take it or leave it thing. You know? So I was recently contacted by a developer in San Miguel who was struggling with this issue because they watched the Planning Commission hearings, and they kind of wanted my viewpoint. So when a developer from San Miguel contacts you, that's the time to get in and make all these things known. It's a little tough to do it at the Planning Commission hearing.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Rose, I do want to point out that staff dipped in office and professional.
Which is another question. We did a project down the street a bit, and we had a condition placed on another parcels that saying MNMN, I say unto you, you can only develop it commercial. So I didn't see that condition here, but then again, our planning area standard here is a bit more specific. Is that how you've captured that requirement so they can't come back 10 years from now and want to do something?
Exactly. The planning area standard was changed to only allow residential use on this parcel of that five parcel site. Okay. So the rest of the three remaining vacant lots will need to be developed with commercial use. And the units, as Cammie was saying, the units for water, as TCSD issues those, aren't a one-for-one ratio. It depends on the use and the type of use, the commercial use on the site. That'll dictate how many units that are allowed. So you need to keep that in mind.
You know, I would pose that one of the benefits of being on the Planning Commission versus being on the Advisory Council, although advisory councils get in early, they don't have any authority other than to just make recommendations. The reason we have the authority to condition or approve or deny or make changes to projects is because the Board of Supervisors is counting on, and the public is counting on, our judgment and our experience to weigh in when necessary to change these projects to make them better so that they more accurately honor and reflect the needs of the community. And if we're going to take the position that, well, you know, the project's already at the end of the pipeline by the time it gets to us, so therefore we can't change it, we might as well just be a perfunctory administrative body that just, you know, basically blesses these things and let them go on. I think it's disingenuous to cry water as a reason for not downsizing some of these units. These are fairly large homes. And, you know, downsizing units is a water savings, and I think those water savings could easily be reflected in a couple additional units on the property. And I mean, I've given up trying to push for inclusionary housing on these projects in advance of our ordinance, even though I think we're legally able to do that. I know that we don't have the support for that. But this is a creative, solution-based, alternative way to make some very small increment of benefit relative to providing a couple more quasi, they're not even affordable by restriction, but quasi-affordable units by design, which is what we're always hearing. People want affordability by design, not by regulation. And so here we, the five of us, have an opportunity to do that. The question is, are we going to take an action that is in support of more affordable housing, or are we going to take an action that once again slams the door on another opportunity to provide some affordable units?
Back to your density discussion, you know, that's not what the neighbors want, okay? So we're going to sit up here and say, sorry, folks, we're going to make it more dense. I don't care if you want less dense or not.
Okay, this is really a philosophical discussion here, and maybe the question of water units and the availability of water for this particular application and the other properties adjacent and attached, in a sense. Mr. Woodall, can you offer just a very brief
table? Yeah, just to clarify quickly on the issue of water. We are looking at the other parcels as being medical office buildings, a typical doctor's office, and we've done many, many of them in this area, a typical doctor's office of 1,000 to 2,500 square feet probably can get away with one water unit. Any physicians that are specialty-type physicians, even in that square footage, they're going to be at two water units. We have uses right across the street in the Templeton Medical Facility that are, we have one that's 8,000 square feet, and it needed 13 water units. So there is water is a compelling issue. Kim Hatch is the designer for the project. I'm actually the presenter, so I don't have all the detail. There also are some easements on this site that make achieving additional density perhaps a challenge, but I need to go on the record and say we met with the fire department, it was last week. They have asked for some very modest changes to the site circulation. As part of those changes to the site circulation, we will commit to looking at the density issue and we'll commit to looking at the square footage issue. That said, we're here seeking approval today.
You know, committing to looking at it is one thing, but conditioning the project to require it is another. You know, Ms. Griffin pointed out that staff did bring this up at the initial consultation, and I know that the individuals in the room today have heard this discussion many, many times in the past relative to the earlier projects and also to other projects about the need to have smaller, smaller units and more of a mixture. If water is a problem, I don't think...
To make a comment before you make your motion, if that's acceptable.
You're the boss.
No, I'm not. I think that what we're hearing... I'm so glad we moved off of fences, but besides that, because I think the discussion we're having is a meaningful discussion. What we've heard today is something that I think we're going to continue to hear over and over again as we attempt to... create opportunities for higher density adjacent or interrelated to single-family neighborhoods. I would like to point out you can have higher density without being attached. I would encourage my fellow commissioners to go and look in the Edna Islay area. We personally lived in two homes that had zero lot line setbacks side to side and moved on. Single family, detached, lots of privacy, worked very well, and my guess is the density was somewhere way up there. Anyway, just as a little educational point from me to you. I don't believe that I can certainly understand and actually appreciate the idea of having smaller units that, quote, might be more affordable. I don't think that it's going to make any difference in the water units that they have or don't have. Unfortunately, I don't believe it goes by the square footage. I believe it goes by the parcel. With that in mind, I'm sorry if I lectured a little bit, but I think we will have to make compromises along the way where we have single-family residents that are larger, maybe appropriate and maybe not appropriate, I don't know, and trying to put higher density next to them. And I think that this actually does work. I would like to see smaller units because I think they will be more affordable, but I'm not personally ready to condition this project with that. You may make it.
Just before that, I'd like to make another comment, please. I think I'd like to remind our commission that we put affordable housing, as all of us, as one of our primary goals here and visions for what we'd like to see. And if we don't do something here or try a little harder to do what we can, we're missing an opportunity. And so I'm going to not support this project as is. If we can't try to make some provision to provide for people who can't afford this type of housing. And I don't think it has to hurt the applicant or the neighbors unduly to scale back a couple of the square footages on some of these units, whether it be by maybe attaching or just making a few smaller number, a greater number of smaller units. And I think that's our job here. If we want to see that happen, we need to start pushing a little harder. The inclusionary ordinances aren't going to be with us for a while yet, but we have an opportunity now in cases like this. And we can help the builder at the same time. If they could get a few more units, it doesn't necessarily have to have an impact on them, a negative impact economically.
Okay. Commissioner Rose, do you wish to make a motion?
Ms. Griffin, hopefully you have your language that you had heard our discussion on condition 2, so you could read that into the record at the appropriate time. Just before I make the motion, I want to say this went to the advisor group quite some time ago. It went to us 6 months ago, and it was approved. I understand where the community, needs to go with density. I fully support that, but I also recommend every time we make one of those density-related decisions over here, it always gets overturned by the Board of Supervisors. So
we should stop making our best recommendations?
No, absolutely not.
What I'm saying is the ship of state moves slowly. It's very slow. But I think we're moving in this direction. It's disappointing that it takes that long, but you know that's government for better or for worse. We're also responding what the neighbors want. The neighbors don't want it to be denser. And again, I don't think we want to be so cheeky as to say that we know better than them about their neighborhood. The issue that troubles me the most is the noise, the fence, and especially since one neighbor would prefer masonry and another would prefer wood. I'm going to go down on the side of wood for a couple of reasons. One, as Mr. Lombard said, it has a benefit for noise. Sometimes you put a hard object like a rock fence, though the sound tends to bounce off of it. I think the wood fence as proposed, the 6 foot, is going to help with the noise issue, and it's also going to help with the privacy issue. So, Ms. Griffin, do you have your Exhibit B, the conditional use permit? We are changing 1B from 29 feet to 30 feet. Condition 2A, as read into the record by staff. And Exhibit D, we added some language to 15E, additional map sheet.
Was there also a change in 2B, which was somewhat generic?
2B.
Incorporation of tags recommendations. I believe that there was, and it outlined
right.
certain areas.
Staff read into the record earlier, and I'll do it again. Condition 2B will add to the words incorporation of tags recommendations. It'll read, including the addition of articulation to set garage doors behind the building faces. And then also we left open...
The tree.
The trees, I think I'm going to go with the environmental office saying that they can go faster if they're not the box trees. Okay. And I've also forgot a change to condition 9 of the conditional use permit, exhibit B, recognizing the fire department's letter of 9-12-05, vice 02.
Is there a second to that motion?
Yeah, I'll second it.
I'd like to speak to the motion before we take a vote in a last-ditch attempt here. to persuade another commissioner to the light side. Commissioner Rappa, you made the point that you didn't really see a correlation between the size of the home and the water use. You thought the water use generally went with the parcel, essentially. But smaller homes have used less
water. No, I didn't use the word use. I used the word water unit or water allocation. It has
nothing.
I totally agree with you on the use.
Okay,
so
we don't.
We can skip that point.
Okay, we'll skip that one. Your comment regarding the livability of single-family residents at multifamily zoning, I get that. I mean, this is clearly, you know, multifamily density, even though these are detached single-family residences. The benefit of having an attached residence, whether it be a duplex or a triplex, really speaks to the affordability of the unit, because those units can be built more economically and sold more affordably than, you know, three units in a triplex are less expensive than three individual single-family homes.
Until you add the insurance component of $100,000 per unit. You're absolutely wrong on that.
Okay, shopping.
We have an understanding. You have an opinion that attached smaller units is your preference.
Or single-family, single-story, smaller units along the back property line. I know Commissioner Rose is very concerned about, you know, neighborhood issues and neighbor concerns. We heard very clearly from the neighbor who lives there and is going to continue to live there that she would prefer not to have two-story homes looking into her single-story residence. So that's why I won't be supporting the project. I think we can do much better.
Okay.
I'd just like to chime in and add that, too. I like the look of this project, and I'm sorry not to support it, but I think we have an obligation to try to do a little better here and provide the array of housing types that we promise to provide for people who can't afford this.
And you're right, and I'll go back to my comment. The applicants are hearing this. Projects are slowly changing. Slowly.
Mm-hmm. All right. No further comments. May we have roll call on the motion, please?
Who made the second?
Commissioner Melskow.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Melskow?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
No.
Commissioner Christie?
No.
Chairperson Rappa?
Yes. Okay, it is 10:30. We will take a 15-minute recess and return at 10:45.
Applicants are hearing what we're saying, but they're seeing what we're doing.
You
Hi, Nicole Italy is Paula right there. To consider a reconsideration of the resource management system level of severity for water supply in the Napomo Mesa area. James Caruso is a project manager.
Madam Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners. Chuck Stevenson, Long Range Division Manager. Circumstances relative to water have changed in Napomo in the last year or two. If you recall, the Board of Supervisors recommended a level.
Shows both the...
What's the screen? Ah, there. Yeah. Very good.
Hey, right there.
You're good.
The outline, the larger outline, is of what we call the Napomo Mesa Water Conservation Area. That is how it exists in the general plan right now. We also have the line that establishes the urban reserve line. That's the difference between urban and rural uses, and that will become more important as we discuss these issues. The little bit of background. Right now, we have a level of severity 3 that has been established by the Board of Supervisors, and in RMS parlance, that is still a recommended level of severity 3. In other words, it was not certified. At the time that the board placed that level of severity 3 recommended, they made a series of determinations, one of which was that a building moratorium was not appropriate at that time. There were quite a number of water conservation measures added for both interior and exterior water use that would reduce the amount of water that new development would be using. There is a requirement for general plan amendments to identify a supplemental water source and also to establish a fee to pay for that supplemental water source. That's also called an AB 1600 study. However, since that recommended LOS 3 was placed on the Napomo Mesa area, several things have happened. The supplemental water project that the CSD had taken the lead on is now being reconsidered due to cost. You might have heard that the original estimates of $6 to $9 million, I believe, have skyrocketed as more engineering and more design was done on the system. It's causing the CSD to go back and reconsider the what supplemental water source would be best for the area. The other thing that is happening is the groundwater adjudication case decisions are coming down. The most recent decision was called the Phase 5 decision, and we'll talk about that a little bit. And then lastly, as we have discovered in almost all instances of water, there is conflict between expert opinion. And one of the jobs of your commission, and ultimately the board, well, first staff, then your commission, then the board, is going to be try to sorting through all of the expert opinion, putting the discussion into the proper framework. And I'm going to say this now, and I'll say it again, time and time again. We have to remember that the framework in which we're working is the resource management system. That's a very, very specific framework that we have to keep our minds wrapped around. Instead of thinking about this as a groundwater adjudication case, we have to stay within the resource management system parameters. So what is a level of severity 3? Have your attention, commission attention to the highlighted section of this quote. A level of severity 3 may also exist if the time required to correct the problem is longer than the time available before dependable supply is reached. Right now, we know there is a problem in the Napomo Mesa area for water supply. The resource capacity study that the county did in 2004 determined that. There is nothing that has happened in the groundwater adjudication case that is going to change anyone's mind, or should change anyone's mind, because this is not a groundwater adjudication case. This is a resource management system analysis. And the basic reason why a level of severity 3 should be certified is that we know there's a problem. The district is taking the lead for the area to try to identify a supplemental water source. However, it is not rational to think that a supplemental water source is going to be identified, designed, permitted, and constructed anytime in the near future. And in fact, when we use the estimates of 5 to 10 years, there's several people who think that we are underestimating that, radically underestimating that, and it would take even longer than that. Once you understand that there is a problem, that supplemental water is required, and that the lead time is incredibly long, then there is no other action to take than certifying the level of severity 3. I also want to emphasize that I just went through that 5 minutes or so without using the word overdraft. We will not use the word overdraft here. We don't need to use it. The RMS system does not require us to use it. The RMS system does not require your commission or the board to find overdraft in order to certify a level of severity 3. That's the last time we will use that word. Ah, and there's the slide. I forgot I had added that slide. An overdraft condition is not required to certify a level of severity 3. That's very plain and simple. So we've had some change conditions, so what should we do about it? Well, first of all, we need to certify the level of severity 3, and that's the first recommendation. We also have to acknowledge that the district has taken the lead to pursue a supplemental water source, and I think they need to be acknowledged. A company, which is a private mutual company, and the other mutual companies there have not pursued water retrofitting. We also need to discuss if a development moratorium is found to be appropriate. The department will strongly recommend that this moratorium does not occur in the urban area. There's a very specific reason for that, and we'll discuss that in a second also. There's also the possibility of general plan amendments being, in order to approve general plan amendments, they would actually have to show a decrease in basin water use. That generally is done one of two ways. If you're going from a high water using use, such as an agricultural use, to a urban use, usually means for the site you would be using less water. In other instances, it might mean a retrofit program where you would actually save anywhere between 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 times the amount of water that your new land uses would use. There's also the possibility of groundwater management ordinance. We haven't explored this for NAPOMO. The Board of Supervisors has asked both Public Works and Planning to explore groundwater management ordinances for Los Osos, so we're in the process of learning about that process, and we'll have more information on that during the Los Osos hearings. And then lastly, one of the options is to downzone rural land. One of the worst water users in the residential sense, or the worst water users in the residential sense, are the RS zone land and RR zone land. That allows large lots. Usually you see a tremendous amount of water use for their outdoor needs. If you downzone land, say from a minimum of 1 to 5 acres to 10 to 20 acres, you'll have lesser population in those areas, you'll have fewer lots, and you will reduce water use. Taken all together, let's see what the recommendation is. And first, the department is recommending that you certify the level of severity 3. Second, we would like the commission to discuss adoption of additional water conservation measures. We would recommend that if you do decide that a area-wide water retrofit program for all new development be instituted. We have been working extensively on that in other areas, so we have a little bit of information. If the commission decides that a moratorium is needed for new development, that we specifically target high water-using development. And in California, that means rural areas, not urban areas. And I want to explore that for just one second. One of the problems that we have discovered with water in this county and in other places is that when you have a water purveyor, such as a community services district or a CSA, when there is a water issue, one of the first things that usually happens is that a development moratorium, a water moratorium, is placed on development by that water purveyor. And what that does is that moves development from urban areas to rural areas. It's the what we call the continuation of the rural sprawl model. That in this county, that needs to change. We need to get back to the or start using our smart growth models to foster development in the urban areas. That does several things. Not only is there effects on energy and air quality, but there's effects on water use. High-density residential will use per unit much less, orders of magnitude less water than rural uses. This is the way to save water if a moratorium is called for. And because the district is still exploring supplemental water, and which is going to take some time, it was just recently an article in the paper about desal, for instance, that when they are ready to publicize those efforts and discuss those efforts, we suggest that we come back at that time to your commission to discuss those options for a supplemental water project. One other thing that has happened recently is that we changed Title 19 to require automatic faucet shutoffs in residential construction. Our building department has informed us that the program is less than successful, and on a couple of levels. First, there aren't that many of these types of fixtures available. In fact, they are not made yet for residential use. They're made strictly for commercial use. And it was pointed out to us that there's a recent study that was done in London at the Millennium Dome that indicated that some types of automatic faucet turnoffs will actually waste more water than the traditional. Taking that into account, we will probably be requiring or moving towards removing that automatic faucet turnoff and replacing it with something else that it will be more effective with a measurable, something that the effect can be measured. So that is our recommendation for today. Your commission will hear a lot of testimony regarding the water issue there. But we have to remember to emphasize that we are on a resource management system framework, and that framework.
And just to be clear for, you know, people who are listening, this isn't county, this isn't staff-generated material that was handed to us at the last minute. This is communications from various law firms, basically.
Well, some of them, but not all of it.
But it's not staff-generated. It's all from private parties. No.
Okay, well, let's see what our public comment, the public hearing brings, and we can make a decision on Mr. Melskow's suggestion.
I had a question for staff, and he said that the RS and RR zone properties use water on orders of magnitude greater than just an ordinary urban dwellings, and, you know, I just got to go with my personal experience, and I would agree with you on RS property, you know, 1 acre properties, 1-2 acres. People tend to landscape them from fence to fence, which means lots of water. But some of the RR properties, you know, now we're talking 5 and 10, 20 acres, and they give up there and tend to have smaller yards. But I don't know, is this just a general observation, or we have some scientific studies to prove that? And by orders of magnitude, what do you mean?
For instance, we only take the exercise up to 5 acres. And the 1 to 5 acre size parcels, the estimate is almost 1.5 acre feet per year. We don't take it further than that. A parcel that, say, is at 0.5 acre, or actually, let's go to 1/4 acre, 10,000 square feet, the water use figures are down around 0.6 acre feet a year. So that is a substantial decrease.
Where do you get that? Because most, at least RR properties, are usually wells, so there's no way of determining what their water use is.
That's right. There is two sources of that information. The best source still in California was the City of Santa Barbara study that was done in, I want to say it was done in the 80s and then updated in 1995, I believe. That's still used throughout the state, and we're told is still the best information out there. The other thing is EPA has sponsored several studies throughout the country on indoor and outdoor water use. They're not completely applicable to California because of our Mediterranean climate, but the information we have from people like the East Bay MUD up in the Bay Area, those studies will verify that there is a straight line relationship between water use and lot size.
Okay, thank you.
Just to add a somewhat personal comment, I happen to live in a subdivision that the parcels range from little over 3 acres to 40 acres. We have a mutual water company. For whatever reason, we know how much our neighbor's water is used, and I will tell you that the larger, there's a lot of water being used on these parcels. It's very strange to see your neighbor's usage on your bill, but because we're this mutual water company, we do. And I can just tell you that there are several parcels that use a lot of water.
There are
others with landscaping that is, you know, native, drought tolerant, very minimal, and can use not very much.
Are they metered?
Oh, yes, we're all metered. So this is an actual, it's just my own personal experience. I wouldn't give up living there, but I just want to share with you what I personally observed.
I had an additional question, and that was about water-saving measures being required. Now, the Services District does that because they have the authority to do so and have chosen to do so. What's our hold over Golden State Water and the various mutual water companies? How can we, I guess they're in the business of selling water, at least Golden State Water is. The mutual companies probably are more looking after their own interests relative to their resources. Mm-hmm. But how can we make those companies do things that we want?
Excellent question. And that is one of the conundrums that we've always had when you always have to recognize that different entities and companies have different authorities. The county is not a water purveyor in the area. However, we have the building permit and land use permit authority. That's why we have to focus on, unfortunately, we have to focus on new development because that's what we issue permits for. Everything else has to be done cooperatively. In other words, we have to try to get the water purveyors to cooperate with this program. That's usually difficult because, as Commissioner Rose says, everybody has different interests. A private for-profit company is interested in the bottom line. A mutual nonprofit has its members' interests at heart. So as much as we would like to say we can handle this situation alone, the county can't. That's the bottom line.
Of a water emergency, I don't believe that the county could regulate the amount of water that's used or bought or sold by the various water companies on the Mesa.
I have a question of staff, if you're through, Mr. Rose.
I'm done.
The private and mutual water companies are regulated through the CPUC, I believe.
That's correct.
Has there been any success in any of the other jurisdictions to somehow institute certain measures through that approach?
Yes and no. The CPUC...
California Public...
Utilities Commission, apologize. Like most government agencies, they zealously guard their
turf.
Domain, their turf. However, that's not to say that they will not listen, and that is one of the avenues that we are going to be opening up with their water regulatory office. Not only for Napomo, but for Los Osos and for other water basins, too. And we're going to see how responsive they are. Some folks out in other counties have told us you can cajole them into doing these things. It's not going to be easy, and it's going to be a long-term thing, but we are going to move in that direction.
I believe with the electric companies, don't they have energy conservation measures that are kind of incorporated into the rate structure and the whole, I think that they do.
Yeah, Golden State Water, I've gotten an education from some of the folks at Golden State Water, and this was in regard to trying to have the for-profit privates adopt what's called an ascending rate structure. Mm-hmm. So the more water you use, the more you pay per unit. And it's, according to the Golden State, it's not that they don't want to do that. It's just that it's difficult for them to have the CPUC approve those types of water rate structures. It is a lot of work for them to do it. They are attempting it, and we perhaps can see if we can help.
Great. Other questions starting, Anne?
Yes. I just wanted to thank staff, Mr. Crusoe and Mr. Stevenson, for making explicit here in our staff report as we consider this, the one of many, I guess, conundrums that we're in, where with the water shortage and supply issue, that we tend to restrict growth in the urban areas. So there's an inclination to slap a moratorium on the urban area development to alleviate or the problem while we figure out what to do. But that's contrary then to our established kind of smarter strategic growth principles. So as we look at this, it's always so difficult to figure out what to do. So I'm glad we're not looking maybe to go that route, hopefully, here.
I would totally agree. I mean, that's the first time I've ever seen something like that in print.
Look,
yeah,
to Templeton.
So thank you very much. We know it. It's been implicit for a long time, but having it here explicit is helpful.
Commissioner Christie, do you have any comments?
Yeah, I've got a question. And a clarification. When staff is recommending not to impose a moratorium in the urban areas, but you know the possibility of considering one in the rural areas, are you talking about a moratorium just on building, or are you talking about on a moratorium on creating new parcels?
Well, it could conceivably be both.
Well, the reason I'm seeking the clarification is because I agree with staff's analysis about building moratoriums in urban areas, shifting the development patterns outward. But I think there is a case to be made for imposing a moratorium in the urban areas on the creation of new lots until this gets sorted out. Do you have a reaction to that?
Yes, we have a reaction to that, and the reaction is we would not recommend going in that direction. Instead, we would recommend that new subdivisions in the urban areas continue. However, they be required to be required to not have it be a net new user of water in the basin.
Through an active or a very creative and active retrofit program?
Correct.
And I guess I'm seeking to attain the same level of confidence that staff has, that those programs really do fully offset the new development. I mean, I think it's better than nothing, but I don't think it's better than if the development never took place at all and we got the retrofit activities through some other avenue.
Great point. And we're wrestling with that in another area of the county right now where the board has directed us to fashion our water retrofit program where we have full confidence it's going to save water. And with that proviso, it becomes very, very difficult for staff to recommend a program. You have to make us conservative assumptions, and then you make them even more conservative. You come to a number answer, and then you double it.
But he's kind of a startled reaction to the concept of eminent domain. But there are communities around the state and around the country that have stepped forward and taken their private water companies back into public ownership. And the Montara Water District, just in the South Bay area of near Half Moon Bay, is the most recent and local example. And I think water is one of those resources that it just makes eminent sense to be. It's a public resource that should be in public hands. And I would really appreciate it if staff and this commission and the board didn't just completely shrug off the concept of taking those private water companies back into public ownership. Because that's the most obvious way to manage the resource and regulate its use.
Are you talking about a Golden State Water or a rural water company, a mutual water company?
The private, not the mutual, the privately owned companies that exist out there.
Okay.
Other questions or comments? I have a question for staff, and without going into a whole lot of detail, one of the ways in which conditions might be changed is through revisions to the growth management ordinance. Could you just give me maybe an example of what that might be?
Certainly. I'm glad you brought it up. The simplest one, take growth management ordinance off of urban areas and make it strictly a rural area requirement.
I could certainly applaud.
Take it off of what?
Urban areas. Have no growth management in urban areas whatsoever.
Okay.
And just meter out the rural area building permits.
And with that, we would be encouraging development in the urban areas, given whatever else is adopted, versus encouraging development.
Correct.
I
need to warn you, that's a very simplistic.
I realize that.
There's other.
Really?
But it's a wonderful place to start if we are serious about changing the rural sprawl that has occurred in the county.
Okay. That answered my question, Commissioner.
The only way that would work is if we were really, really ratcheting down the number of building permits we issued in the rural areas, which we haven't really seen much political support for actually accomplishing to date.
Right. It would be a complex program.
Cautiously down that road.
Commissioner Rose?
I had a question before we get into public comment. In quick scanning this stuff and the staff report, I didn't see anything about seawater intrusion and conductivities going up, and so I'm hoping that the speakers or staff will bring that up. It's getting worse, it's getting better, it's staying the same, we have no data, or whatever the issue is.
It's pretty clear there is not seawater intrusion going on.
Okay.
In this basin.
And I'll look forward to getting some hard evidence of that. Okay. Not to trust that you're not tame, but I want to give me some facts.
Before I open the public hearing, can I ask the commissioners, planning staff has sort of strongly suggested that we try and stick to the resource management program that is before us today and not get into the adjudication issue. Do we want to encourage speakers to speak to the issue before us, or do we want to just let people go on what they want? I have an opinion, but I'd like to hear from other commissioners.
Telling us we should or should not adjudicate is a complete waste of time because we have absolutely no
authority.
That's
enough comment then. Okay. With that, we will, if there are no further questions, we will open to the public. I do have several speaker slips. Michael Wynn, followed by Bruce Buell.
Good morning. I'm Mike Wynn. I'm president of the Napomo Community Services District. I regret that Mr. Buell is in a meeting with a supervisor right now, and I have to go as well, so I'll be brief. I do appreciate your courtesy for usually giving more time for an applicant, but I do not propose to take more than the 3 minutes that are usual for public comment, asking only the staff be allowed to respond to public comment afterwards.
All right.
Thank you. First, the question about whether the PUC governs such private water companies, mutual water companies, they don't. This is really at the heart of part of our issue. We have urged the Board of Supervisors, we do urge you to recommend that the level of severity 3 be certified. We had hoped that it would be. The resource study has already been completed by the county. All the legal requirements have been met for that process. We only ask that we allow to move ahead with that. If I can be candid with you, it sometimes appears that we're speaking out of both sides of our mouth. We have just approved that we have been successful in negotiating an area planning standard. It does have low flow water features. It does limit the amount of turf. It has done many things that are very helpful, and it does extend to the entire Mesa, not just within the district. We are working urgently to bring in supplemental water in compliant with the court's requirements. It's true that a project that we thought was hopeful and fundable proved to be much more expensive, but at whatever cost, we will, in fact, bring in supplemental water as quickly as possible. For those reasons, we do urge you to join us in urging the Board of Supervisors to certify a level 3 severity. And wearing my other hat as chair of the Water Resource Advisory Council, I can tell you that they voted unanimously with only 2 abstentions to do the same. Thank
Questions
you.
Of Mr. Wynn?
Yes. Give me a layman's reason why. Is it declining water levels? Is it seawater intrusion? Is it pumping costs? Why do you think we should certify this level 3?
We do not have seawater intrusion. But the honest truth is that once you have seawater intrusion, you are years away from even stopping that, much less reversing it. So it's not as though you can run up to the dock at full speed and just stop on a dime. So we have to look out at the processes farther. We're using more water than what falls on us in a year. And by the way, in this last year, we only got 40% of what's average, so we're in real trouble there. Secondly, we do have pumping depressions, which have been noted by the court. I'll try to stay away from adjudication.
Thank you.
But nonetheless, the hydrological features showing damage are there, which is why it will be a groundwater management area. It'll be overseen by the court. And we certainly will have to bring in water just to make up that damage, much less more water for future growth. So for those reasons.
Damage? What, like the ground is sinking and less capacity?
Pumping depression. No, we have not had ground subsidence. But a pumping depression still means when you pull a water table down, there are wells that are affected nearby.
Okay, thanks.
Other questions?
Yes, I had one before
Mr.
Wynn leaves. I just was curious what your feeling is or your take on the recommendation that something happen. For example, Mr. Caruso threw out making the GMO apply only to rural areas, some kind of change that we're seeing as a recommended action.
Actually, the county has already adopted an ordinance saying that subdivisions will pay an in-lieu fee for supplemental water, although we're going through a 1600 process, so the precise number isn't set yet. And they've already agreed there will be no general plan amendments without wet water online. So we feel we've made some great progress, but it would be undermined if the level 3 severity were not certified.
Okay, so just to follow up there or be clear in my question, I guess, we're seeing the recommendation that we initiate some kind of revisions to the GMO, so I thought you might have some recommendations for us. Is there a specific recommendation or two that you would promote seeing?
You know, I'm sorry. The only GMO I know are genetically modified organisms, and I'm sure you're not
talking about management. Growth management.
Growth management. Growth management.
We're too good on acronyms around here.
Every board in front of
I have farmed. I have other thoughts.
You don't.
Okay.
Yes.
Growth management ordinance has been kept to a cap of 1.8% as opposed to the county's general 2.3. We certainly support that. We would support that the ordinance that sets planning area standards remove the one about automatic turnoffs. Those simply don't work very well. We had good intentions when we recommended that.
Other questions of Mr. Wynn? I have two.
Yes, ma'am.
One is we have a recommendation that supplemental water be identified in 6 months. Is that a realistic amount of time?
I understood the recommendation that we would give you a progress report in 6 months, and we would be very happy to do that. And by the way, we're making very good progress, so we will have good things to tell you at that time.
It doesn't say progress reports. It says determine that the supplemental water project for the entire Napomo Mesa area be identified within 6 months.
I'll let our...
Okay, I have a second question then that perhaps
yes,
you can answer. You have, I congratulate the district on the conservation measures you have implemented. Have you been able to create any studies or any evaluation or any numbers that it's working or the degree
is bad?
Oh, okay. Thank you.
I apologize for that.
Thank you very much.
Oh, I do also wish to apologize, if you'll allow me, for handing you stuff late. We only got it yesterday. We did want it in your hands, but we will talk through it. We don't expect you to read it while we're talking.
Okay. Thank you.
I just went straight to the therefore and got the...
The next speaker slip I have is John Seitz.
You read a lot of that stuff, though.
Followed by Jesse Hill.
Forget the whereases. Go to the therefore.
Let's get to the therefore.
Please give us your name for the record.
Sure. My name is John Seitz. I'm the Napomo Community Service District Legal Counsel. My office is right across the street on 1066 Palm. I'm the one that wrote the letter from the lawyer. As you may understand, we just received this information yesterday in a public hearing before the Napomo Community Service District Board. We thought it was pertinent to your discussions here today, so I quickly put it together and got it copied. I just wanted to remind the Planning Commission of a couple things. The Commission has already offered a recommendation of a severity level 3 about 2 years ago. And that's what happened. It got converted to a recommendation and a certification of a severity level 2. I put in, I know I'm not supposed to talk about the groundwater adjudication, but I put in the phase 3 ruling. I highlighted a yellow portion of that phase 3 ruling The only reason why I wanted to highlight it is because Judge Comar did find cones of depression and physical attributes that were in the mesa that weren't shared by the entire groundwater basin, which is from Orca up to Pismo Beach. Just wanted to make a clarification to James's staff report that I believe this is all consistent. More importantly, what we did include in there was the district's latest study on the seawater intrusion. That's tab B. Now, we got access to one of three sentinel wells along the coast. And believe me, we had to go through an extensive permitting process because of habitat just to get access to that well, and we have begun monitoring it. The good news is this, that there, as confirmed by James during Mr. Caruso, I talk to him all the time so I sort of get these names. There, from this one well, it appears that there is no seawater intrusion that is occurring right now. There is a positive flow to the ocean. That's the good news. To us, what it means is, hey, if we do something now, we can avoid a resource catastrophe. We're not going to be, we're not immediately addressing seawater intrusion as we are in other coastal basins throughout this county. So we see that as good news. The second document, tab C, however, is the groundwater storage study that we just received yesterday, and I want to go through that from a lawyer's perspective, which is obviously not always the easiest. But if you go back to the color pictures that are in that report, you'll start with this one right here, and it's figure 3, which shows the seawater elevations of the groundwater basin in year 2000. And by the way, this pack of documents has been delivered to County Council, Mr. Stevenson, and Mr. Caruso as well, so along as well as the clerk. What you see here on Exhibit 3 is, start with Exhibit 2, I went back one, is what the groundwater basin, as far as being at sea level, is shown on Figure 2, Spring 2000. You flip open to Spring 2006, you see that it's growing. And then you go to the Figure 4, and now you see what the groundwater basin looks like at sea level, with obviously the pink or reddish colors being at or below sea level. As far as the groundwater basin, there's some horizontal pictures that also reflect the pumping depressions that are at or below sea level, specifically Figure 7. What I would like to, by the way, this points out and kind of confirms, I know we're not supposed to talk about the groundwater adjudication, but Judge Comar's observations about the groundwater levels in the Napomo Mesa area as compared to the entire groundwater basin. What staff would like to see come out of this, we talked about a GMO amendment. If you take a look at your staff report and you go to page 4-7, you're going to see the county ordinance, which ultimately means that you're going to have some folks paying for supplemental water that get these land divisions out in the future where existing ones won't. So you're going to have an unequal pay structure, and it would go a long way to paying for the supplemental water. And the other thing that I think the district would like to see, there's three sentinel wells out there that monitor seawater intrusion. They've been inactive. The district at its own cost went out there and rehabilitated one of them, got all the permits so that we could start monitoring for seawater intrusion. I think we'd like to see a recommendation of the Board of Supervisors that they fund the activation of the other two sentinel wells that are out there in order to get a better picture of the seawater intrusion and the effects of the outflow to the ocean from the groundwater basin. Lastly, I want to say something. Our consultants that appeared before us yesterday were very appreciative of your staff, your county staff, in conducting all the monitoring, getting us access to the wells, helping us with GIS data to get these wells pinpointed and to do these studies. And it's really been a cooperative effort between our consultants and the county staff in getting this Exhibit C together. So I want to make sure that they're well recognized that this, we are seeing a lot of cooperation in trying to get this issue resolved. Then I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions?
I have a question.
Mr. Melskow?
No, go ahead.
Oh, all right.
One question for you. I think I know the answer, but I just want to make sure. A Sentinel well, is that a well that doesn't pump water for domestic use? It's just
yeah. Unfortunately, these wells are right along the coast, which means that the permitting process just to even get access to those wells can be a real, I want to say an obstacle, but a real challenge. Because there's habitat, and obviously there's some species that are out there in those wells, and you can't go out there during the nesting. And there's just all these restrictions. We finally got access to one of them. And what the district is doing is putting in sophisticated SCADA systems on these wells so that they're sort of self-monitoring, so we don't have to get these permits to go out there each time we want to take samples. So we're trying to do as much technology as we can on these wells so that we can get constant feedback. I can't really tell you where we are with that, but I know it's budgeted, and that's what the effort is.
And you said there were three of them, and they were all defunct until you rehabbed the one that you just got access to? Is that what I heard?
Right. There's two remaining wells that are out there that aren't being monitored. In fact, what we understand is they haven't been monitored for the last seven or eight years.
Do you have plans to rehab those and get those online as well?
Well, that's what we're asking for you to recommend to the county, that that they contribute to the monetary costs. And I believe these are actually county wells.
With all the water bonds and grant money that's out there that's being, you know, divvied around up in Sacramento as we speak, has the district been pursuing any grant funds to get those wells operational?
Well, I don't know. I can't speak specifically to those wells, but I can speak specifically, yes, the district has been making applications. Unfortunately, there are other applicants within San Luis Obispo that seem to have a higher priority at the moment. Than the Napomo Community Service District Supplemental Water Project. But we've been actively participating in Prop 50 grants. We know what's out there.
And okay, good.
We're not that high in the totem pole.
And Mr. Seitz, I just wanted to follow up on that. I've gone to various water meetings over the years, and it's been stated there's no saltwater intrusion, and we ask, how do you know? Because we have monitoring wells on the coast, and I assume that
I haven't been reading bad.
They've been utilizing them, and now this is
an eye opener.
An eye opener, yeah, of what's actually happening. There aren't any other monitoring wells, are there?
I think there are.
Oh, there are.
What we're talking about is the three monitoring wells that are immediately adjacent to the ocean, as far as the Napomo Mesa management area is. We know that there are monitoring wells to the north up through Pismo Beach area, and we know that there are monitoring wells going south from these three locations, but these are the three wells that are most adjacent to the Napomo Mesa.
And would be most relative to the information relating to this.
Okay. Right. Well, thank you for that update.
Yeah, that was going to be my point. I mean, how could we possibly say we don't have it when our eyes are closed? So I'm thinking about, well, why don't we? Because Mr. Wynn said that the Mesa is using more water than is essentially falling from the skies. Now, I understand that there's probably some moving north from the larger portion of the basin. So is that why we're not really in deep trouble, or is it because it's a very large basin and we haven't got there yet?
I think it depends how you define deep trouble. If you define deep trouble as trying to address seawater intrusion, if that's your definition of deep trouble, then from this one monitoring well that we just had this report on, we're not there. If you say we're in deep trouble because we're heading that way, and all the evidence supports that, then we're in deep trouble now. And what, from I think my perspective, I can't speak for the whole board, is that the county is in a position to address it before it happens, rather than trying to address it after you have a resource. We believe there's a resource depletion. We believe a severity level 3 is appropriate and almost mandated under the RMS. But the good news is that it probably won't, if we get to it now, it probably won't require addressing seawater intrusion, because we will have implemented those policies and procedures that will mitigate it from happening. And that's what we think we should be doing.
Further questions?
Yes. Mr. Seitz, you briefly talked about implementation of fees and some inequity in the fee structure, and I was a step or two behind you there. So if we were to look at fees, as I guess has been recommended here already in the area-wide standards, am I correct that they haven't actually been assessed yet for some water implementation? The opportunity is there, but they haven't been assessed?
It's a mixed bag. The district has implemented them. So as development occurs within the district boundaries and within these areas of annexation that Mr. Wynn briefly talked about, they are charged a supplemental water assessment to the tune of somewhere right around $13,000 a connection. The county, when they adopted the ordinance that's in your agenda packet, addressed this issue saying that that new land divisions outside the urban reserve line, just to use what the staff has been using, to implement an AB 6, well, Tim and I are going to have a little debate this, but we would more or less phrase it an environmental mitigation fee to offset the water and help purchase the supplemental water that will obviously be used to serve these projects. What the district's position is that we should not, the county should not be authorizing subdivisions until that fee is actually in place and is actually being paid.
Is that happening now?
No. Yes, it actually. there is a fee being collected now, but it is the $13,000, and it's probably not going to be anywhere near reflective of the fee once the AB 1600 study is completed. Once the district comes up with their supplemental project and we know what that cost is, then that number will change.
So the county is currently imposing a similar $13,000 connection.
Which is the same fee they're charging.
Okay.
Well, just so I have this clear, because this would be news to me. I'm looking at Tim over here. I think it might be news to him. And Chuck and I are friends, so if I sound like I'm humorous here, it's only because I know these folks quite well. My understanding is that the AB 1600 fee or the supplemental water fee or the environmental mitigation fee, no matter how you want to characterize it, is not being charged. I think it's being noted in their general conditions for when they apply for a land division, but if they get their map recorded prior to the fee being implemented, they skate. I think that's my understanding about what's going on with the AB 1600 fee.
So is this the inequity, then, that you previously alluded to?
I'm trying to understand that. Oh, yeah. Here's the inequity from our perspective. One is that these land divisions are going to be ultimately sucking up our return flows from supplemental water. And we have one class of folks that are in the Napomo Community Service District that are paying a supplemental water fee in order to fund a supplemental water project. So we have that inequity. Secondly, we would just have the inequity in the unincorporated area, because eventually some of the subdivisions are going to be paying the supplemental water fee, whereas these people that I'm using the word skate loosely here that are skating now won't. And again, they will be using the same return flows from the supplemental water to water their projects.
So stated another way, by allowing these subdivisions to go ahead, we're basically diminishing the pool of land that we need to depend on to fund this supplemental water project in the future.
I think that's
yet another reason to have a moratorium on subdivisions in the urban area here.
Rural. Rural or urban?
Well, it's happening in the... I think the rural area is sort of already being taken for granted. What staff had said earlier is they didn't necessarily recommend a moratorium on new land divisions in the urban area.
Right. And so that so
would this argument apply to those new land divisions as well?
Well, if you consider the urban area within the Napomo Community Service District, they are paying the supplemental water fee.
So if somebody comes in today or tomorrow and applies for a new land division within the services area, they are paying that fee?
They're paying it. Exactly, because they can't process their project without a will serve letter from the district. The district doesn't issue will serve letters without the payment of the supplemental water.
Okay. So the question of the fee is only in outside of the services area in the rural area.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker is Jesse Hill, followed by Eric Greening. I've been a little lenient with the time because we had representatives from the service district, and I just encourage people, if they can, to stay within some reasonable time limit.
Thank you. I'm Jesse Hill. I've been working as chair of the NCAC Water Committee since 1999. Was a member and co-chair of the Water Resource Advisory Committee, studied WPA 6. From there, ended up being an attorney involved in the groundwater litigation. Currently represent 50 landowners on the Napomo Mesa, different trailer parks. Went through the entire groundwater litigation, was one of the attorneys, one of the last standing attorneys, who actually had input in December 23 of 2004 into the stipulation, and was one of the people who actually had a determination about the settlement agreement itself. The document as part and parcel and the science that we've looked at in the basin, I think, is particularly important. The number of hydrologists who testified and the amount of data that we had in terms of input into all the modeling that was done is crucial for an understanding of what happened and what that basin is like in its current capacity. What I've given you in terms of the Santa Maria groundwater basin is this exhibit. This is one of the 400 water well levels, and the input that we had for those 40,000 water well levels over a 50-year period into the groundwater basin. This was remodeled by Scalmanini, and absolutely agree with all the comments that there's no seawater intrusion, and Scalmanini's model comes to the determination that, in fact, there's 50,000 acre-feet of water, fresh water, running out of the basin and into the ocean. That's the number that was agreed in the Phase 5 rulings with respect to the water purveyors, writings, draftings, and settlement. Mr. Schneider was one of the few people who actually attended the Phase 4 and Phase 5 trial. Obviously, the landowners have a slightly different position in terms of what happened, but it's unequivocal that the hydrologist who testified, Dr. Stephen Bachman, who's the water master for Ventura, who was the hydrologist from ConocoPhillips, looked at the mesa, modeled it, came to the conclusion, no overdraft. The other, it's part of my letter where I went through each and every person who said yes and no, and or that the basin was not in a state of overdraft. But if we skip to the last memo, if we're just talking about the resource management system, and we just want to look at that number, the last page of the memo that I've provided from SAIC I think is important. Obviously, no one thinks there's a sub-basin other than Papadopoulos. Totally unsupported that water is not going to flow through that big sand pile. But if you just look at the RMS number and you look at the SAIC document that I've provided, and SAIC are the people who we all pay as a purveyor and as a water user for the NCSD, and I pay for, what they say is in May 5th, 2006, and it's the yellow one here, and this is crucial, that, number five, there are presently 25 million, according to Allroth, acre-feet of water of groundwater in storage above mean sea level in the Santa Maria Basin. This would meet the projected water demands at 2003 water levels for 15 years without replenishment, if it did not rain, because the consumptive use documents that we've done and we know about in terms of the actual use in that basin, everyone's pretty much agreed that that's 140,000 acre-feet of water. So if you take the 140,000 acre-feet of water and you divide it into your 2.5 million acre-feet that's in that basin, if it does not rain, you have a 15-year supply of water before you have seawater intrusion. So for your RMS system, the correct level, if you actually look at it in a basin-wide approach, is you don't have, not only do you not have seawater intrusion, you don't have a problem for 15 years. It's a level one. It's not a level three in that basin. And that's the problem. And only by throwing out all of the science and all of the models, the 10 hydrologists who testified at trial, do you get to the idea that somehow the basin is in anything other than a level one. And science, the science just does not support that. So I thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Question? I'm sorry. I guess there are a couple of questions.
Mr. Hill, just one quick question. You first said 25 million. Did you mean 2.5 million?
2.5 million. Right. In number five.
Okay.
In the SAIC memo for BB.
Okay.
BB was the hydrologist that the NCSD hired who testified at trial.
Okay.
Very competent man. That was his conclusion.
Thank you.
I had a couple of questions. Right, you say there's 50,000 acre-feet of water going to the ocean now, and obviously that's required. Either the water's going this way or it's going that way.
Well,
where's this coming from?
What's required to keep the freshwater-ocean interface is 10,000 acre-feet of water. There's an additional 40,000 that flows to the ocean as a result of our water management practices, Twitchell, importation of state water into Santa Maria, because they're bringing in 12,000 acre-feet of state water every year. And then Twitchell adds 32,000 acre-feet of water. Those things over time, when Twitchell came online, have, according to the Scalmanini model and what the water purveyors put in their Phase 5 brief, state that there is 50,000 acre-feet of water flowing to the ocean from that basin. You need 10,000 for the 32-inch interface that to stop saltwater intrusion. So there's an extra 40,000 flowing out of the basin.
Okay, so they're saying that it's coming from south of the mesa, essentially, this extra water, because we've heard testimony before that there's not enough rain upon the mesa to supply the mesa's needs.
The actual testimony is that because most of Twitchell lives and the big watershed behind it is in San Luis County, comes down the river. The river itself is over in San Luis County, most of it, although part of it goes into San Maria. 30,000 acre feet of water on the San Luis side is flowing to the ocean. 20,000 is flowing to the ocean on the Santa Maria side. Not that that particularly matters. If you draw down, it moves north and south, as you've noted.
Okay, now, next issue, you said there's no evidence of seawater intrusion, but we just heard that essentially no one's looking. And then I look at the chart that Mr. Seitz supplied, and this is figure 4, spring 2007, groundwater elevations, and you know the red stuff means it's below sea level, so
what's going
I'm not a hydrologist, but it seems to me like if the groundwater is less than sea level, sooner or later, unless it comes around from the sides, it's going to end the 50,000 going out.
And I think a wise old farmer who was a client who's lived in the Mesa all of his life had the best comment with respect to that. When you start seeing those dunes, lakes dry out, then you know we have a problem. And I think that's a truism, because not only were there piezometer wells that were monitoring, they got covered in sand, they were hard to find. The county stopped monitoring some of those wells because the amount of water that was actually flowing to the ocean, that's what we learned from Christine Ferrara, physically happened. They weren't concerned about it. But I think the true answer to how much water you can physically look at and see, if you look at that Dunes Lakes complex, and those lakes are fairly full, and you can physically see them, you have a very good idea of how much water is flowing to the ocean, and Papadopoulos addresses that, and he tells you there is a 2-mile freshwater interface in his study. And if you have 2 miles of freshwater from the ocean, you have to have a significant amount of water flowing out there. And that's why the judge found Scalmanini's model to be credible, and he ended up being our water master. But I do want to say NCSD is doing a good job. I mean, they're trying to do the right thing, and I know you guys are too. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Eric Greening followed. Did you have a question, Ann?
No, I'll wait. Thanks.
Eric Greening followed by John Snyder.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I support the staff recommendation for level of severity 3 certification, and I like the direction staff is going relative to isolating the rural area as the place not to subdivide and not to develop to deal with the emergency. I thought one part of it went a little bit far in the oral presentation, the idea of completely eliminating the growth management ordinance oversight of growth in the urban area. My concern with that is everyone assumes that the general plan has set a build-out for the urban area. What happens as you approach it and reach it, and what mechanism do you have to control growth and keep it from going beyond? What does happen when you reach build-out? I mean, are you going to be re-updating the area plan and suddenly inventing a whole new build-out, and based on what? You have lots of other impacts besides water to deal with. My biggest concern, however, is I have a great skepticism about the ability of supplemental water in any form to solve the fundamental long-lasting problem. At best, it would allow more population to inhabit the area before a new state of imbalance is reached with that higher population. Then there are specific issues. We've talked about desal and state water, specific issues with both. Desal is a huge consumer of energy. Normally, desal is attached to some kind of power production, but even on its own, if energy were somehow brought in to power the desal, there are tremendous environmental impacts on the coastal and marine environment. Unless the plant were situated very locally, you would also have a pipeline from wherever it is, perhaps a long pipeline, and the cost of that pipeline was the big issue with the project that the CSD thought it was doing. Relative to state water, the statewide supply of the state water project falls far short of the state water demand. In statewide demand, in fact, the statewide contractual amount to be delivered, and that imbalance is getting worse. Never mind that a judge almost shut down the project for an indefinite period to deal with fish and wildlife issues in the Delta. Never mind that the pumps at the Clifton Court Forebay are actually below sea level, and it's only a very tenuous a balance of levees, outflow of fresh water, and so on that keeps them pumping something that resembles fresh water. The specifics of the projects need to be much better scrutinized and understood. It's not just the light at the end of the tunnel. It's perhaps an extension of the tunnel. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. John Snyder, and the last speaker slip I have is Pat Flatley.
Hello, my name is John Snyder, and I hope you got my emails in the last couple of days and were able to read my letters prior to this meeting. If not, I think you should read them and then come back at another time. My wife and I run a nursery on the Napoa Mesa. We depend on water to grow roses. It's our livelihood. Back in 93, NCSD claimed there was a water shortage, so I immediately went down to check out the facts. My well in particular has been at the same water level since 1976. So there's a lot of talk about depressions and water and blah, blah, blah. Same level. Goes up every year, down in the summer, up, down, up, down. Basically flat the whole time. So I'm, of course, very suspicious of any claim of a water shortage, although very concerned because my livelihood depends on it. I've been collecting data for the last 13 years. I've basically been going to every meeting that has the word water in it. I'm the only person who actually, you know, unless you consider a few lawyers people, the only person who actually attended all of the trial. They even switched judges, so I outrank him. And the staff would like to disassociate the trial process from this process, but really we're looking at the same data. We're looking at the same facts. We're looking at the same process. In the court process, you know, the outcome of the settlement was technical committees to manage the basin. That's one system that's in the court to protect the basin. There's also the people who didn't settle have the court process that they can use to go through and protect the basin. The basin can't be overdrafted. Supply cannot exceed demand, period. If such a thing occurs, anybody's entitled to go up to the court and say, please correct this problem immediately. And that would include an immediate pump. And you've heard about the Clifton pumps. They gave them 60 days. So if that's not immediate and soon enough to prevent seawater intrusion, I don't know what is. It's the best thing we've got. I'd like to read something. All of the experts, there's a little confusion about water shortage. At the beginning of the trial, there was a difference of opinion. I think at the end of the trial, in the current time, after Twitchell was created, there was no difference in opinion. All of the experts were saying there was adequate water in this basin. During the settlement process, I suggested that more water be imported into the basin, and there was absolute refusal by all of the purveyor staff to bring more water in because I was told very plainly there's more water in this basin than we could possibly use in the future. And now I want to read something from NCSD's opening statement about their expert, which is Mr. Beebe, which Mr. Hill talked about. Mr. Beebe will have studied or been instructed on the terms of the physical solution. That's the management plan before the court. He will have looked at the demographic projections and information. He will project projections of land use, agriculture to urban, the generation of more agriculture on available land, and will project water demands as they go out into the future as to the particular uses, and will demonstrate that because of the way the water is allocated, that the physical solution, there will be adequate water to meet the demands. And so their own expert basically looked at 2030 build-out in Napomo and said there'd be adequate water and there would be adequate time with the technical committee and the court process to resolve any shortage in the event of a drought. So I find it a little bit odd that they're here in this hearing saying that we have a problem. And now on to a different subject.
But kind of quick kind of quickly if you can.
Well, if I could have the same extension as the other speakers, I would appreciate it. I've produced some data here. It's very clear that the Papadopoulos study and the Science Application International studies, and I haven't seen this latest graph, but from what I did see, just the flip of the page, that's the same graph as was previously available, are based on pumping water levels, not on static water levels. It was very clear at the court that any expert that had pumping water levels in their analysis basically was not credible. And so you shouldn't be basing your analysis and your conclusions on non-credible pumping water levels. And secondly, the staff report is based on this Nipomo subbasin, which is something that Mr. Jones of the NCSD drew up at one point. There is no subbasin, and if you draw the circle wider, there's much more water available. Mr. Hill is correct. There is 50,000 acre feet going to the ocean. The farmers, which are just to the west of the Nipomo Mesa, are actually tiling the ground because the water table is so high and pumping the water out to get it out of the root zone of the plants to the ocean. So of the 50,000, only 10,000 is needed to go to the ocean. That leaves 40,000 available for use. The state water return flow from the Santa Maria importation is available for anybody to use. If Santa Maria doesn't use it, there's a huge amount of water in the basin. It's completely ridiculous to have a level 3 shortage. All of the solutions other than the desal plant, which I think is recognized as being, you know, economically unfeasible, essentially consist of building a pipe from NCSD down into the valley, whether they hook up to the Santa Maria system and use the Santa Maria pumps by the airport, or whether they go down to the Benita School Road and pump out of that area. Basically, they're just moving water from a slightly deeper portion of the aquifer to a shallower portion. So how can you just draw a line and say we have a level 3? You could draw a tighter line just right around NCSD's well and say it's a level 4. So whatever circle you draw would determine your conclusion. If you look at San Luis Obispo County, there's a huge amount of water available. There are flowing artesian wells at the seawater intrusion. There's some implication that we're not monitoring the wells. It is a crime that the county hasn't been monitoring the seawater intrusion wells. The last data collected was in the late 90s. They should continue that, but right behind those wells are monitoring wells of the refinery, which used to be Unocal, and I'm not sure what their current corporate structure is, but that's part of the Unocal or the oil cleanup down there. They have a set of monitoring wells. I think there's 30 of them. And then behind that, you have the municipal wells. And also, Santa Barbara County comes up into San Luis County and monitors wells. And in the North County, you have more monitoring. So based on all of that, at trial, there was no evidence of seawater intrusion. And there's continuing monitoring, which I think we should support.
Could I ask you to conclude, sir?
Yes, I'll conclude. Lastly, NCSD talks about supplemental water, but as I mentioned, all they're really doing is taking water from one part of the basin to the other. If you're really going to require supplemental water, you ought to make them get something like Nacimiento water, which would be completely from outside the basin and actually add water to the basin. So I think you need to look closely. There's a lot of misstatements in the record that need to be corrected before you proceed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have one last
some questions.
I don't believe I got any emails from this gentleman.
Okay, well, I sent them to R. Hedges, which is where I was instructed to send them to, and she's supposed to, they wouldn't give me your direct email. She said, okay.
And we don't want you to have them, and they normally send us lots of stuff.
Yeah, I didn't receive them either.
No, I didn't either.
Well,
We normally do.
What email did you send
them? I sent them yesterday and the day before. I'm sorry if they didn't get there. I use the same procedure I've used and the same email in on earlier transmissions to you.
Is this information we got today the duplicate of that?
Or? It is. It is indeed a duplicate, yes.
Okay.
Well, I have Shipley and Sites, and I doubt if that's you.
No, I'm Kosh.
I have
California.
This. I think I got from Mr. Hill.
I'm Kosh, California, John Snyder.
Oh, Kosh, California.
Kosh, California, yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Snyder,
okay. Okay, and it's only a 3-page letter.
Okay, well, the whole package.
Oh, no, there's like 3 or 4 packages.
I back up everything I say with the actual facts and then the website addresses of the actual data.
All I got is what I guess is your executive summary.
You have the wrong, or maybe you somehow got skipped, Bob.
Oh.
I don't know.
I got three different things. Is that correct?
One has a paper clip. Do you have a big one?
Well, there should be a paper clip with a cover letter, which was letter 6, and behind that was letter 1, letter 2, letter 3, letter 4, letter 5, and 7.
Like Gone with the Wind.
I only got one.
Okay. Well, I got...
If you took the paper clip off, it would get a little confusing.
Oh, okay.
It is.
So, but could I answer a question while you're looking? Or?
Yes, please. Do I hear you saying you do encourage finding some supplemental water source?
No, I think
or,
at this...
Or are you saying
I think
that's re- not necessary?
I think at this point there's adequate water in the basin. NCSD is required to bring in a certain amount of water, and really what's happening is they're just trying to shift the cost of what's required in the settlement to landowners that are outside their sphere of influence. And there's no need for that. The supplemental water that they bring in will be of a lower priority legally from the perspective of Santa Maria's water use than, for example, a community water system, or not a community, but a mutual water company on the Mesa, which would be an overlying use, would have a higher priority. So actually, a mutual water company or a well would actually supply more water to Napomo in a drought than NCSD could, because their system could always be cut off in a drought legally. So if you want reliable water, you should be using wells on individual properties and mutual water companies. They have the overlying right.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Rose, do you have every communication now that you need?
No, I do not.
Okay, we'll figure it out.
I can remedy that if I walk over there, and I'll do that.
All right, the last speaker slip I have is from Pat Flatley.
Good afternoon. My name is Pat Flatley. We have a project that we're going to be starting real soon on Teft in Napomo. And I just came to listen today, but I put my name in because I thought maybe I wanted to clarify. There was a question whether fees were being assessed on developments, and this was a fax that I received this morning. So, unfortunately, I couldn't make copies. This is the fee deposit calculation of fees for this project. And at the top it says deposit. It's not an actual, even though we will pay these fees, it's still considered a deposit, because if fees were to go up before we completed the project, we would pay additional fees to whatever the fees went up. I'm not sure if you realize what these fees amount to. For 22 residential condos and 4 commercial buildings, $516,680 to be paid by June 30th, or this is rescinded. Goes away. The will serve letter is gone. $516,000. 22 residential units. This is the NCSD.
The fee schedule that you're showing us is from the NCSD?
This is what they sent. This is the bill that I received faxed today, initialed by Bruce Buell this morning, and he faxed it over before he came up here.
$500,000?
That is $16,540. Per unit for a condo.
And that fee includes what, sir?
This is a water capacity fee of $2,599 for every single meter. The supplemental water fee per meter is $11,556. The irrigation supplemental water fee is $11,556 per meter. So they have now, this bill will collect $370,000 towards supplemental water fees. And so I'm just not sure if you weren't sure that fees were being collected. Just so everyone knows.
They're collecting them from you.
That's right. Collecting them from us in a big way as well. And giving us a deadline to pay those, or the will serve letter will be rescinded.
Thank you, Mr. Flatley. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the commission? Seeing no one else, I will close the public hearing.
Madam Chair, before you do that, I wonder if you would allow the... since this is a largely an Napomo and a community services district issue, I wonder if we could... And we don't really have an applicant, per se, but kind of the Napomo Community Services District is an applicant. I wonder if we could hear from Mr. Seitz if he could comment on any of the public testimony. If you'd.
I don't have a problem with that. Do you have anything to add, Mr. Seitz?
Maybe a few things.
While Mr. Seitz is walking up here, it's 12:15. Do we want to work through lunch or take a break? What's your choice?
Push on through?
Okay, guys. Mr. Seitz, would you give your name for the record, please?
Yes. My name is John Seitz. I'm the Napomo Community Service District Legal Counsel. I'd just like to address a couple comments from the speakers. One of the, and they were all focusing on the groundwater adjudication, which we were supposed to stay away from, but I find myself trapped in responding. The one thing that was unique about the groundwater adjudication from the very start, and that was that the judge found that it was one single basin that stretches from the Pismo Beach all the way down to Orcutt. So instead of the district, correctly, as Mr. Snyder has pointed out, we did argue for a sub-basin, that there should be a sub-basin that have separate hydrologic characters that would be managed differently. The judge honestly rejected that. He said it's one huge basin. He did find, as I've pointed out to you in Exhibit A, that he found unique characteristics related to the Napomo area that were not consistent with the entire basin. But he found that just because we had this one area that had these cones of depression and this lowering of the groundwater table, as shown in those exhibits that I passed out, that's going on, was not enough evidence to declare the entire basin in overdraft. That was the basis of that decision and the issues of overdraft. As far as the water outflowing to the ocean, I can't either confirm or deny Mr. Snyder's figures. I know that our own SAIC hydrologist or expert has testified that, presented evidence to the district yesterday that indeed there was a positive flow to the ocean. The district, like Mr. Snyder, views that as good news. As to what Mr. The rest of them have to say, we would love to concur. You know, we would. One thing, the district provides services to its residents and to the community. We would love to concur with every observation that there's just so much water in that basin that we shouldn't be restricting will serve letters. We shouldn't be implementing supplemental water fees to Mr. Flattery back there. We'd, for lack of a better word, we'd be to hog heaven. That's what we do. We provide service to our residents. We can't concur with that. With these observations. We know that we have these cones of depression. We know that we're pumping below sea level. Those graphs show you that we are pumping below sea level. We wish it weren't so, but it's the way it is. And to me, the whole idea of having this RMS system is to avoid a future catastrophe. And I think uniquely as to this basin, it is deteriorating. Those graphs show you that it's deteriorating at a substantial rate. I think Mr. SAIC said we lost 7 feet last year on the Napomo side of the basin of water. Those color charts that I show you verify that. Those color charts were based on information of a joint effort between the county and the district to go out there and monitor these wells. This wasn't an effort just by the district to come in here and snow you folks. it was an effort that we use and we're continuing to use and we're continuing to spend money because what we want to do is provide a long-term sustainable water supply to our residents. That's what we're in the business to do. And we think that that's in jeopardy. We think the scientific information supports, or our jeopardy finding is based on scientific information. And we're increasing rates. in implementing these fees. It's very unpopular for us to do this, as you can well imagine, and if we had a choice, I guess if you were to pull my board, they would say, no way. So I'd be happy to answer any further questions.
Yeah, Mr. Seitz, the agreement that you had with Santa Maria, is that still in limbo, or will that be still be one of the choices down the road?
Yes, absolutely. We have this MOU with the City of Santa Maria, and I can tell you that we're actively participating in negotiations for other water that could be transported by the City of Santa Maria to the district, other than hopefully crossing the river with this pipeline. That's what's added the cost. The costs were actually exasperated because we had the original engineering cost about $7 million, but what we found out with subsequent more detailed engineering reports and further consultation with the City of Santa Maria, that we had to hook up 4 miles deeper into, I'm using this word loosely, it could have been three miles deeper into the City of Santa Maria, and we had to take the water 3 or 4 miles further towards our main water structures, or our main water lines in the Pomo. That's what added the cost, was the length of the pipeline. So what we're trying to do is figure out, can we implement a project that either has a much shorter pipeline, as well as these other ones, so that we can methodically go through these so that when we do increase rates again, we will have a scientific basis to do it, and the community will know that we used a big effort in making sure that the project that we do implement is the best project that we could.
That leads to the next question. If you did make an agreement and became the solution, moving the basin water from Santa Maria, is that the solution to the basin?
Well,
I mean,
and that goes to the heart of one of the questions that came up. The answer to that is yes, and the reason why is the City of Santa Maria has what we would, I'm going to use this word loosely, water rights to water. And I'm not going to just articulate everything that they have, but through the groundwater adjudication, they have the return flows from Twitchell. They have a right to that. They have a right to state water, and they have a right to their return flows. Plus, the judge did reverse himself, by the way, and did find a groundwater overdraft and did provide the City of Santa Maria with prescriptive rights along with Golden State, which is obviously a point that the other side's not emphasizing here. So they have water rights. They have water entitlements, and they can sell those water entitlements. Secondly, as the adjudication panned out, we had these physical solutions. These physical solutions were parceled to areas which we typically think of the Santa Maria Valley, the Napomo Mesa, and the northern cities, based on different physical qualities of not only their sources of water, but their groundwater storage. So, bottom line is that Santa Maria has more water than it needs. That doesn't mean the Mesa has more water than it needs, if you're thinking about one huge groundwater adjudication. And if you really want the real true evidence of it, the South County Area Plan was supported, their environmental determination was supported, that there was water spilling over from the Mesa onto the Santa Maria side of the river. And there was water spilling to the north to Pismo Beach. Therefore, there could be no overdraft as long as we're spilling water. The evidence today is that the water is coming from the north to from the south to the north. You know, so we know that there's been physical changes to the groundwater table below both aquifers.
Is there any other way to get that blend from Santa Maria? The state water part of it goes right past your main line, one of your main lines, and then all you have to pick up is the other component, whatever they make with it.
And I got to be somehow politically sensitive in answering that question.
Cuomo voted down state water, correct?
Well, that's one of the political sensitivities of it is that there was, before my time as our legal counsel, there was a referendum during the state water project where Napoma Community Service District had applied for it, and it was turned down by the voters. That doesn't mean you don't go back and say that again. There's also the issue of the size of the state water pipeline. Part of the environmental process approved by the county was that the pipeline, as it comes south, continually decreases in size. That was part of the environmental mitigation on growth inducement. So the capacity of the line is ever decreasing. So when it gets down to our area, it is only meant to carry the capacity to serve people south of us. So it's a very difficult engineering solution, too.
Madam Chair, all this discussion about the various sources of supplemental water is interesting, but I don't know that it's germane to the question before us today. I mean, we are going to be getting an update from the Services District in 6 months regarding their progress identifying a supplemental water system. But, I mean, to get into this level of detail now, I don't know that it helps us make our decision relative to the finding under the RMS system.
Others?
Unless I'm missing something.
But I did have some questions. and I put a lot of weight on this figure 4 that you've provided us with your spring 2007 groundwater elevations. But then I heard a comment that about static versus running levels. Could you comment on?
I'm sorry, but I think you're way above my pay grade.
I think Commissioner Christie had a point. If the commissioners would indulge, that we have a slightly different issue in front of us.
But I think is exactly germane, because to me the seawater or how close we are, and that matters. And so either this is a valid graph or it isn't.
I'm just saying that the district, again, working with the county, I don't think the county may have had much input into the computer generation of these graphs. But these are the well monitoring. What this graph shows is, and I can't answer is static. I don't know the term. I don't know that I can.
Okay, then there's no sense going on any further. I'll just leave it with that figure. SAIC and the district know what they're doing when they're monitoring water levels, and I'll let it go with that. The next question I got is, we heard testimony about we don't have a seawater intrusion problem because we got the lakes out there, and then there was some testimony about a farmer. And I got to add some, you know, that does make sense to me. If you got freshwater lakes between you and the ocean, gee, there must be water there. Could you comment on that?
Oh, no, because I don't know that I can speak, that I have the expertise to speak to the hydrology of those lakes. I know that just growing up in the county, that Osa Flacco Lake is right by the Santa Maria River. I mean, I go out there all the time, and I can tell you there's water in it. But I don't even, that doesn't mean to say that there aren't these cones of depression and that these graphs aren't accurate as far as that we're over-pumping that portion of the mesa. Osa Flacco Lake is south of the Napomo Mesa Management Area. I mean,
okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I just have one additional question very quickly. It's been mentioned that there are wells on the Chevron, whatever that property is, whoever owns it now, that do monitor. Have you been able to extract any information from any of those private or quasi-private wells?
I think we have, and I think that if you take a look at the
one of the graphs or something?
Yeah, one of the graphs, I think it's probably the first color picture that is on there, shows the wells. And this is kind of interesting because this shows, that's this graph right here.
I didn't really want to get into the individual wells.
I think all those wells that you see right there are being monitored for well levels.
Okay. The reason I asked the question is I believe it was yourself who asked that we not approve or that we recommend no new subdivisions, and secondly, that we recommend funding the seawater intrusion monitoring wells.
Right. The two that have not been...
Okay, but my purpose in asking you about the other private, semi-private, whatever, wells, is you are extracting information from those.
Chairman, I know this is not the kind of answer you want to hear, but if you take a look at this chart, you're going to see the three wells that are what we call the sentinel wells along the coast, this being the coast. These wells, you can see how far off those wells, the wells are that we are additionally getting information.
Okay, so your point is they're in a different location.
Exactly.
Thank you very much. Anything else from the commission?
We did have a question. I thought, or I'm not clear on the distinction that you've raised, sir, between the pumping levels and the static levels. So I think that's what you've stood up to talk about. So if you would.
Just give your name again.
Yes. My name is John Snyder, and I would like to speak to that. If you look at my letter number 2, I don't have the 2007 graph because they just came out with that, and I haven't been able to do the public records request to verify it. But I did look at the 2006 graph, which basically, I believe, looks the same way. A static water level is when the pump is off, the water table reaches the equilibrium of the groundwater basin. It's representative of the water in general. When you turn the pump on, the water gets sucked down in the well pipe so that the water can move sideways to be pumped out to your residence or whatever. So when you have the pump on, the water level drops, and depending upon the size of the pump, you know, it can drop 10 feet, 20 feet. If you got a municipal well, it can drop 50 feet. You know, if you have an ag well, my well drops about 30 feet when you turn it on. So if you look at the data levels that NCSD provided in 2006, you can see in my letter that SAIC had some minus 48s, the numbers that are below sea level. So I went back into the public record, and you look at NCSD's chart, which is the third page of that letter, the last one, and it clearly shows an X that those wells were pumping when they took those measurements. So the minus 48 below sea level, the below sea level measurements are pumping water levels. So for whatever reason, SAIC is historically in the past used pumping water levels, which invalidates that whole what we call the blue spaceship with those depressions, because they're not really below sea level. You just turn the pump off, the representative water table in general is above sea level. And also in letter number 1, Papadopoulos makes the same mistake on a well that's just to the west and south of the mesa, and it's clear that DWR indicates that all those were pumping, and it wasn't below sea level. And his whole analysis about below sea level water tables is centered around that example. So how can you trust a study where the main example and the main graphs are clearly using water levels that are below sea level? And I'd certainly like the opportunity to come back after checking out this other well, because I'm pretty sure it's exactly the same thing, because water tables don't change 50 feet in a year. Their own testimony was they change 7 feet. My well changes 40 feet within the year, and, you know, between dry years and wet years, there's another 20 feet, you know, between the drought of like 91 and the surplus of 95, 96. You know, there's another variation on that. So it goes up and down. We clearly have had less rain this year. You would expect it to be down this year. That doesn't mean it's headed down below sea level.
But
does that answer your question?
Well, yes and no, but
yeah. Okay.
Well, I got to respond to that. I say, if a pump is running 24/7, it doesn't make any difference to me. If it's on all the time, you got to look at what the water level is.
Well, then any basin on the coast of California would be overdrafted or have a too much water being pumped, because they all do that. I mean, that's just that's just where the pipe is. If you go out 10 or 20 feet, you don't have that depression. And what you see there is a hydrologist's extrapolation of that number. And if they don't know that it's pumping, they're not extrapolating the cone properly. If it was a static water level, you would have a depression that's permanent. If it's a pumping water level, it's a very small diameter cone, and so the wideness of the cone, even when it's pumping, is wrong on those graphs.
If it was permanent, you wouldn't have a depression because the seawater would have already intruded to bring it back up to the static water level. If you're a services district, you can't just turn your pump off.
Well, no, I understand that, but I'm saying if you want to take the measurement, you do. And if you look at, for example, Cal Cities.
Well, you're taking a measurement that's meaningless because they have to pump water from their wells.
No, because let me back up. I'll try to explain, because what you're concerned about is the water in the groundwater table. What I'm saying, what you're looking at is the water in the pipe. And so if you have a well that when you turn it on, it pumps it down 50 feet, that's the water in the pipe that's 50 feet lower, and it'll stay that way. And if you look at the Cal Cities wells, they measure every week. They turn the pump off, measure the water level. That's the static water level. That's what hydrologists use. And I have an example of hydrologists talking about this. They say don't use these water levels in the court trial. And then they turn the pump on, and they measure that water level. So you get two sets of curves. One's the pumping level, which is because of where their system is. They're always pumping the same amount of water out. The pumping water level is always below the static water level in those particular wells because of the constant pumpage. So the water table of the aquifer is the static water level, and the pumping water level is the physical characteristics of the pump. If the water table all around you is 50 feet above sea level and your pump is 50 feet below sea level, you know, you have to actually go out and affect that water table further out until it gets to the sea, which is not like 100 feet or 20 feet or 200 feet. You're talking miles. So that cone doesn't go miles out into the ocean where it would suck in salt water.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have we had enough discussion?
Close it up. Time to talk.
Now we can close this. Okay, and seeing no one else, I will close the public hearing, bring it back to the commission.
And I appreciate you letting us get that other. It helps.
Maybe we start with the commissioner from the district who has personal least experience with wells and whatever.
Before we bring it back to the commission, would it be helpful? I'd like to hear staff's response to what's happened today, because staff's been working with this much more closely over a long period of time than any of us, I think.
That's fine. Thank you.
Sure. We'll be quick. This is the reason why we cautioned that we have to divide what we're doing here. Real quickly. The groundwater adjudication case is none of our business. It's a court case, and it is very, very narrow. It talks about what people's rights are as overliers and who has senior rights, junior rights. That's why it goes under the heading of they're asking a very specific question, and it's not a question that we are asking. We're asking a completely different question in the resource management system. The other interesting thing, seeing how it was brought up, and the reason why we need to leave adjudication alone is that, yeah, the court said it's not an overdraft. And the court said, yeah, there's water. If that's true, then why did they say that Napomo needs supplemental water? And see, that's why we need to stay away from that. We need to stick with the facts. And the facts are we're in the resource management system program. There is a problem with water on the mesa, and we need to address it. And this is the way to address it. I can't make it any more simple than that.
Okay. Commissioner Melsko?
Yes, I think Mr. Caruso summarized it pretty well. If we make a mistake here and it is not needed, there's no harm done. But if we decide that it isn't needed and we get saltwater intrusion, then we do have a problem. So I think James has summarized it very well.
Commissioner Rose?
I'd agree with that. To me, the elephant in the room is the seawater intrusion, and I'm very glad to hear that we don't have any evidence that it's occurring right now. And I look at those graphs, and you know, we can get the pump on or the pump off, but I know when I turn my pump on, okay, didn't matter what the level used to be. It matters what it is while I'm pumping, and I'm irrigating all day long, and you know, it matters what that static level is. But I only irrigate maybe once a week, and the services district is doing that 24/7. And so, granted, those graphs, you know, they're taken from a particular point, and they're measuring out. And you don't have to be real smart to figure out that the water level is higher further away from the active pumping. But as Ms. Christie points out, the service district has to pump all the time, so turning them off isn't really an option for them. Granted, there's certain times of the year they use less water, and I presume that's why they take their measurements in the spring as rather than late August. So is that pumping depression, is that red zone getting bigger? Yes, it is. And where's it going to go? And so I agree with the, you know, I got to go to what the services district, those are the people in the district, they know what they're doing. They hire experts to tell them what to do. And to me, if we have a bunch more land divisions, we have a bunch more water without regarding what the consequences of that, we're making a big mistake. And Mr. Caruso is absolutely right. The adjudication, that's not our business. The court's going to settle that, and we don't have anything to do with it. We're talking about should we require more conservation measures? Should we be more gratuitous with our land divisions and new subdivisions? And to me, the answer is yes.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Wyatt, any comments?
No, just that I would like to follow suit and add that I'm glad that we're looking at this now and to see that there isn't a problem yet, and seems like it behooves us to take action before it becomes a severe problem.
Okay. Mr. Christie, comments?
I just concur with everything that's been said.
Okay. I might just have a couple of very hopefully quick clarifications. We've had a request from the services district that they fund the seawater intrusion monitoring wells, whatever they're called, because they aren't either working or they aren't being reported or whatever. Can staff answer that quickly?
There was a question there?
Well, the question was that we recommend that the seawater, and I'm using the wrong word,
Sentry wells
be funded, assist the district in funding those.
That would be a proper recommendation from your commission.
Okay. And then the other one was that aside from land divisions, aside from general plan amendments, there be no new subdivisions. And I believe you spoke to that in your presentation.
I don't understand that.
I think we need to clarify that.
What does that mean?
Yeah. Thank you, Chairman Rabbit, Chuck Stevenson. I think we want to clarify that what staff is recommending, that the subdivisions not be allowed in the areas outside of the Napomo Community Services District, out in the rural areas.
Right.
But within the urban areas, that subdivisions could occur in accordance with the current general plan. So we might have projects that are mixed use or others that may need to do subdivision. I think what we're also saying is that we're encouraging the district to continue with their retrofitting program.
Look, if I could add one thing. Remember, part of the URL includes Golden State Water. And so what I think we're trying to get to is to make sure if there are subdivisions that go forward, they're paying this fee to somebody, either the district or the county or whoever is going to be part of the solution. And right now, it's just the district that has a fee in place because we're still working on the 1600 study.
Okay, I was operating under a slightly different set of assumptions. I thought we were talking about a building moratorium in the rural areas, which would include new land divisions, obviously, but would also include projects on existing parcels. I thought what was in play was whether or not we were also going to apply a moratorium on new subdivisions of land in the urban area while still allowing building to go forward on existing parcels. Am I misunderstanding?
Well, I thought that wasn't the chair's question, so I...
Well, the chair was asking about new subdivisions, and when Mr. Stevenson clarified, he said, no, the ban on new subdivisions was just in the rural area, and I thought we had a building moratorium in the rural area. So I think we need to understand what we're talking about.
We can talk about that, and perhaps Mr. Caruso can clarify his recommendation.
All the options are on the table.
Yeah.
Well, don't tell us that. Give us your...
Well,
oh, please.
The staff recommendation would simply divide everything between urban and rural, or if you're
paying a fee or not. So regardless of whether it's development or subdivision, we need to recognize the difference between urban and rural on both of those things. And number two, remember in the back of your head, those urban subdivision, that urban development that we don't want a moratorium on should go ahead only in places where the supplemental water fee is in place. And then that brings it from everywhere in the URL to just the district boundaries.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'm Tim McNulty. If I could comment on the idea of a moratorium on existing lots of record, I would discourage the Planning Commission from going to that point. It's one thing to prohibit future subdivisions of land, and quite another to say that existing lots of record cannot be used for the purpose for which they've been zoned and general plan designated. I think it raises the stakes for any challenge to that regulation. It makes them much more difficult for the county. So unless you think it's absolutely necessary, I think if you're talking about any sort of moratorium at all, it ought to be looking at land divisions. I also wanted to remind the commission that, you know, within the boundaries of the Napomo Community Services District, there is a fee in place, as we heard. It's quite high, and it's being used to develop a fund that ultimately will pay for some sort of supplemental water project when one's identified. If the county manages to put a fee in place that would be effective outside the bounds of the Napomo Community Services District, it would serve that purpose too. And so whatever type of moratoria you're looking at, you want to consider both what is going to happen during the period of the moratoria to overcome the reasons that are causing the moratoria, and you also want to identify the end point, and that perhaps would be the implementation of a fee that would enable the collection of funds to support a supplemental water project.
I just like to make my comments very clear. I do support the staff recommendation of encouraging development within the urban service line and within that area. I do encourage that. My only concern on the staff recommendation is reality. 6 months does not seem like a realistic number to me.
If I could, we did back off between the staff report and the
You forgot to tell us.
Well, the staff report does say a project. The PowerPoint presentation said on the report back in 6 months on the status of the supplemental.
I'm sorry, then I guess I missed that. So
we
actually,
did hear that.
Under our recommended actions, you would be amending. That would be on 4-4, recommendation number 3.
Yeah, if you can look at the screen. That number 4 on the screen is would take the place of that report back.
Okay.
And in fact, the recommendation on the screen is probably gives you a little bit more detail than what the staff report says.
Okay. Chairman Rapa, if I could
yes.
sort of add to this too, we agree with council that the building moratorium would be problematic. We're more referencing the idea of land divisions in the rural area. A more appropriate venue for discussing the building piece of this might be through growth management ordinance. And I'd mention that when we were at the board a week or so ago on annual growth management ordinance, we asked the board to authorize staff to look at several measures that would modify the growth management ordinance and make it more ways to implement smart growth principles through the growth management ordinance, which in looking at number 2 on page 4-4, this was one of the ideas that we actually included in our recommendation to the board. Look at ways, how can we encourage development into the urban areas and discourage it in the rural areas to some extent through growth management. Another opportunity that you'll have to look at the building piece of that is when we come back in 6 months relative to the report on supplemental water. It may be necessary at that point to look at more conservation or more stringent conservation approaches than moratorium.
See, I read that recommendation as that a complete development moratorium should only affect lands outside the urban reserve line. I mean, I thought that was very clear, that that's what staff was recommending, was a moratorium on development outside the urban reserve line. That's what your recommendation calls for. And there certainly is ample precedent for that. I know that, you know, there's areas all over this
state and even in this county that have building moratorium based on water shortages. I don't know why we're pulling back from that here.
Not that we recommend.
Unadopted by the county, I should point out.
In your comments, I wouldn't support that, and I would not support that for the reason that I believe if we can have a thorough discussion and hopefully some revisions to the growth management ordinance to where it will encourage development within the urbanized areas instead of, as it is, a just a lottery system, so to speak, where you get in line and you could be in Timbuktu or you can be, you know, Teff Street. That isn't managing growth or managing resources, what we have today, in my opinion. But if the end result is going to be that we really look at a growth management program that emphasizes growth where, in my opinion, it should be and where the resources are available, I think we've gone a long way to solve some of our problems.
I think that's how we get there, is by saying a building moratorium in the rural area.
We just have a different opinion upon which road to take, I think.
I just wonder, though, Mr. Caruso suggested that maybe a way of doing that would be making the growth management ordinance apply only to the rural areas. We have heard, for example, Mr. Greening suggests that maybe there needs to be some kind of ordinance pertaining to the urban areas, that just taking that out of the urban area might not be wise. So staff comments?
Yeah, I think this is certainly one idea that we will be exploring. What we told the board was that we will look at a variety of approaches to amending the growth management ordinance. This might be on the table for discussion, and we'll bring those back to the board in a few months to get their direction more specifically on which ones they really want us to dig deep on. So, and bring back with potential ordinance amendments in the following year. We're hoping to have a proposed ordinance package amending the growth management ordinance this time next year. That's our goal.
Okay, because I would like to voice support for some kind of change to encourage the urban development, but maybe still with some kind of caps to...
It's all interesting, but you know, we're talking about NAPOMO today.
Except we're talking about NAPOMO today, but if we don't impose or recommend a moratorium here, then if we have no other ideas for what we'd like to see change, then nothing necessarily changes. If we don't have some kind of follow-up ideas that are going to happen and force change, we're going to see the same thing happening time after time and the same problem getting worse.
Well, I'm trying to think ahead to what kind of motion somebody's going to make here, and I see something on the screen here, but I'm having trouble with point number three, discuss a moratorium on high water using development. I have no idea what that means.
Well, we have a recommendation in our staff report.
And I don't have any idea what that one means either, because...
Me, I don't either.
Thank you. I'm not alone here.
No.
I understand point number one. I got that one.
Maybe we should take these and vote on them one by one. Maybe this is several different motions.
It might be wise.
Okay.
Because I think we all agree.
I could support number one. That's for darn sure.
I might suggest that Mr. Caruso try to clarify point by point for you.
Which I have obviously have failed to do. So I apologize for that. So in listening to your commission's discussion this morning and this afternoon, let's see if we can try to focus in a little bit better, because these recommendations are general, and it's because this is a difficult issue.
Oh yeah.
But we can be much more detailed now after listening to the testimony and listening to the commission discussion. Number one is simple. It's the recommendation is to certify that level severity 3. Number two, require a retrofit program whereby all new development within the NAPOMO Mesa water conservation area offsets its new water use. That's basically a retrofit program where you would be saving the amount of water you're using by retrofitting X number of homes.
And that
would go throughout... That would go throughout the Pomo Mesa water conservation area.
Cal State, urban, rural.
Right, because that is a program that is based on building permits, not on water purveying. So that's an example of using an authority the county actually has.
And I can support that one too.
The third one the chair was discussing the funding of the monitoring wells, recommending that to the board. And then the last thing, which is what you're in the middle of discussion of, is do you want to prohibit new subdivisions everywhere within the water conservation area, some places within the water conservation area, perhaps out where a supplemental water fee is not being collected. And I think that would be the staff recommendation. If you want to go to a subdivision moratorium, it would be a moratorium where that fee is not in place, and that moratorium would be understood to be taken off when the fee is in place.
Well, to me, this seems like there's something. For one, I support that. But then going a little bit closer to Ms. Christie's position, to me, we ought to have a subdivision moratorium in the non-urban areas, in the rural areas. But if we didn't, now to waffle a little bit on that, if we didn't go with that, then we have a priority system, as you're talking about in your second point number two here.
Right, but it's not clear how that would work then, that priority system. So
no, I'm not. But you know, if there wasn't commission support for that, I mean, that was something that ought to work.
Let's just see if we can keep it simple, and if we have support for a moratorium on new subdivisions where the fee is not in place, that's why get into a waffly, gray, unclear area? So, I mean, can we take a straw poll?
Okay, I'm for that.
Okay, well, that's three of us at least. So.
How many? Any more?
And the fee is not in place in urbanized areas or non-urbanized areas?
It is not in place outside the community services district.
Are there urbanized areas outside of the community
services? Yes, there are.
I will not be supporting the motion or the concept or whatever we're doing.
Okay. Well, sounds like you're with us, but you're not.
You know that I am with you, but you have the growth management ordinance sounds like motherhood and apple pie, in my opinion. The program that currently exists in the county today does not manage growth according to I know that. So if you want to, quote, manage growth using smart growth principles, you're going to want to encourage development in the urbanized area and not in the rural area.
Except that in this particular case, we heard from the services district that said, if you allow these areas, whether they're urbanized or not, to continue to subdivide without imposing that fee, you are eroding the land base that they are counting on to collect the fees from to provide the supplemental water service. So we're not saying that you can.
Maybe they aren't even areas anywhere within what their district plans to annex.
Well, this is all within the groundwater.
Well, we're getting
area.
Two different things.
I mean, this is same water basin. It's
be helpful to
by
know
the
that
development.
The board agreed that a supplemental water fee would be appropriate for new subdivisions. Our board has said that. It's just that it's not the AB 1600 fee hasn't been finalized.
It's not in place yet. So this is going to be temporary, and it's going to be, if the board goes with it, it's going to be an incentive for them to get that fee in place that they've already agreed to put in place. It's eminently reasonable, in my opinion.
That's good. We all have opinions. I think I just maybe
one of these rare times I agree with you, sir.
Hey, that's okay. It appears to me that there are three people who think that this should be included. So if that's the way it is, that's the way it is.
Okay.
Next, do we have any more recommendations from staff?
Mr. Stevenson, do you want to add anything to that?
I don't think so.
Do you want to add something regarding a recommendation regarding changing GMO to help us address these issues?
I don't think we need to.
All right, we're going
to. I don't think we need to at this point. We'll be back to your commission with our recommendations for changes to the growth management ordinance before we go to the board. We'll want the board. I would appreciate your input on those ideas. So we'll be doing. You'll see those. But
and can the staff report include not a lengthy, but a fairly simplistic outline of what the current program is? Because I'm not sure everybody understands it.
Sure.
GMO program?
Sure.
Did we need to include one more action about reporting back in 6 months on the status?
Yes, that would. I think that's important to keep your commission up to date on what's happening here.
So number three, then, is not just to discuss a moratorium. There was some sort of a consensus. Does one of the commissioners have a...
Madam Chair, can I just add one more comment about this idea? In our current land use ordinance, the provision that we have that talks about a fee for land divisions makes it clear that that fee only applies when a land division is going to increase the non-agricultural water demand of the subdivided property, because that, of course, would be the basis for a nexus to a supplemental water fee. That is, you're increasing the demand. There can be, I presume, because we have this language, there can be subdivisions that do not increase the non-agricultural water demand, and I thought the commission ought to think about that in making a recommendation regarding a moratorium, whether or not that's something you wanted to distinguish.
I would certainly support that, and what I presume you're talking about, there is a lot that has a primary and a secondary residence, and it's one lot, and they want to divide the lot into two, and keeping the same two residences, so therefore there would be no change. And to me, you're right, we shouldn't prohibit that.
That's certainly one example. If you look in your staff report on page 4-7, you can see there's a... the page from the county's land use ordinances have been reproduced there that currently exists, and at the very bottom, the sub F1B is our existing land use ordinance provision regarding land divisions within the Napoma Mesa Water Conservation Area, and that's where we assert that we're attempting to develop this fee. It's there that we have the exemption that I'm talking about. The first sentence says, where the estimated non-agricultural water demand resulting from a land division would exceed the existing non-agricultural water demand. That's when the fee is proposed to be applied, and presumably that would be the basis for any moratoria that would be necessary prior to the development of a fee as well. That's all. I just wanted you to be aware of it.
Thank
no one had mentioned
that
it.
Up, Mr. McNulty.
Does it seem like we need to add then to the motion, or we're comfortable that this
I think
classifies
that
enough?
I personally believe that we have existing regulations to handle this, but I have my own opinion, obviously.
I'm comfortable with this, even if it misses a few, if the net demand is controlled.
Question of staff. Are you going with the recommendations you have on the screen, or are you going with what's on 4-4?
Hybrid.
Neither one.
Well, I think this is talking about the moratorium.
Well, the 4 points that you're recommending.
Right. Okay. Well, I think it's a hybrid of both of these. Your commission has discussed these options in... You're coming up with what's a hybrid of both of these things, and that's actually what staff wanted you to do, was fully discuss these things and decide on one recommendation, and it sounds like you're almost there.
But I think we are going to have to take the recommendations one at a time, because we have unanimity on some and we have, you know,
right,
a split vote on others. So
would the staff please state the first recommendation?
Certify level of severity 3.
Is there a motion to that statement?
So move.
Second.
It's moved and seconded. Further comment? Roll call, please.
Commissioner Melskow?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Chairperson Penny?
Yes. Would staff please state the second recommendation?
Establish a water retrofit program for all new development within the Napomo Mesa Water Conservation Area.
To fully offset. Wasn't there some discussion about...
Right, if we want it to be more to fully offset the new water use from new development.
Is there a motion to that second recommendation?
Yeah, so move.
Second.
Additional comments? Roll call, please.
Commissioner Melskow?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Chairperson Rappa?
Yes. Is there a third recommendation?
Fund the rehabilitation and monitoring of the existing seawater sentry wells.
Is there a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Yes. Or second.
Roll call, please.
Commissioner Melsko?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Chairperson Rappin?
Yes. Staff have an additional
recommendation? I'm going to skip one. I'm going to skip down to request that the Napomo Community Services District report back to your commission within 6 months on the status of the supplemental water projects.
Is there a motion on that recommendation?
So move.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Commissioner Melsko?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Sorry. Chairperson Rappa?
Yes. Are there any additional recommendations from staff?
Prohibit new land divisions within outside the urban reserve line that increase the non-agricultural water use of a site.
So move.
Second.
Okay. I thought we were just doing that until fees are in place. Does that not need to be in there? Don't we want that in there even? We don't really want to be creating, I don't want to be creating this moratorium, but until the fees are in place.
Madam Chair, might I also add that I don't believe James mentioned that the it's really the Napomo Mesa Water Conservation Area as defined on page 4-7 of your staff report that any such restriction would apply. I don't believe it's staff's intention to have it go beyond those bounds.
Well, we meant to add the Napomo Mesa Water Conservation Area, and that's what's in the general plan now. Did I not say that?
We knew
he's it. Being real specific, is he?
Okay.
I like that one.
Is the motion clear?
Would you just repeat it again? Not exactly clear.
I'm
just
with you.
A little clear.
Prohibit new subdivisions. Help me, Mike. Prohibit new land divisions that would increase the non-agricultural water use of a site. Prohibit new subdivisions outside of the urban reserve line that would increase non-agricultural water use of the site.
Within
the Napomo Mesa.
Within the Napomo Mesa Water Conservation Area.
Until such time as.
Until such there. Time as a supplemental water fee is in place.
There you go.
Okay. Would someone care to make a motion on staff's recommendation?
Yeah, so moved.
Second.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Commissioner Melsko?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Chairperson Rappin?
Yes. And that's basically what we already have in our
yeah.
land use ordinance.
And that's the last one that we had in mind.
All right.
Okay. I don't know. I just would like to see some more come back. So I guess Mr. Stevenson has promised to bring us more back. So I'd encourage that, because if the fees are in place, at least there's some structure there, but this same problem will still continue. Without some change to promote development within the urban area that we're not seeing now, some encouragement to move more development into the urban area from the rural area.
You've lost me.
Well, we're just, maybe you can help.
I think what Commissioner Wyatt is just reinforcing is desire on her part and the Commission's part to hear some ideas and recommendations from staff on how the growth management ordinance might be more effective implementing smart growth principles.
Oh, I totally agree with that one.
More or less.
Okay. One little housekeeping or whatever we want to call it. We had asked earlier about the energy summit, and we did receive information, and it is a two-day hearing. It is a two-day program, and I believe the commission already decide this and I missed it or something?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
Could we get Mr. Rose's attention over here?
I'm trying to, I put that away. I didn't have to read it. Now you're making me read it.
I'm sorry. All right, there is a regional energy plan conference on August 23rd and 24th. We would normally have a planning commission meeting on August 23rd. It has been discussed earlier that we have only one item that could potentially be scheduled for that day. The commission had requested more information about the conference and whether or not we wish to cancel that meeting of August 23rd.
Do you know that Mr. Stevenson is going to be on a panel that day on that at the energy conference? So if that's any attraction to you.
Well, I personally would like to. One, I think that obviously the topic is up front and center. Secondly, I guess it's because of my background, I thoroughly encourage us to network with other commissioners and elected officials and whom all, and this is an opportunity to do that.
We would also encourage your commission to consider going to this because it would be a good, if you will, a study session in preparation for conservation element. And so we'll be hearing a lot of ideas and discussions about policies that might be included in the conservation element as a result of that.
And I'd be in favor for canceling that Planning Commission meeting, but I just want to clarify, we had discussed at the workshop about the Planning Commission ourselves holding a workshop about sustainable energy opportunities for San Luis Obispo County, and I'm just hoping that this isn't taking the place of that. This is
No, it would not.
Okay, great. So I'm for canceling the 23rd so that we can attend Mr. Stevenson's panel.
It says on the bottom here of this memo that we were supposed to respond by April 23rd. I'm just reading the memo.
Maybe he'll let us come. James will get us.
Okay.
James will get you in.
So the commission would like to indicate to staff that we would prefer not to have a meeting on the 23rd, and that can we be registered for this program?
Yes. Well, yes, James is going to take care of it.
Okay. Is there anything else before us today?
Yes, we need to decide what we want to do with all the materials that we've received related to the public record. And I'm suggesting that perhaps we take them into the public
record. Is there a second?
Second.
Come on in. I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. We are adjourned until our next regular meeting.
You guys are going to forget that someday.
That'll be the
end of the world.
Invalidated?
I have no idea what
happened. Where does that food come from? No, not Ted.
I think it's actually in the rural areas to some extent through growth management. Another opportunity that you'll have to look at the building piece of that is when we come back in 6 months relative to the report on supplemental water. It may be necessary at that point to look at more conservation or more stringent conservation approaches than moratorium.
See, I read that recommendation as that a complete development moratorium should only affect lands outside the urban reserve line. I mean, I thought that was very clear, that that's what staff was recommending, was a moratorium on development outside the urban reserve line. That's what your recommendation calls for. And there certainly is ample precedent for that. I know that, you know, there's areas all over this state and even in this county that have building moratorium based on water shortages. I don't know why we're pulling back from that here.
Not that we recommend.
Unadopted by the county, I should point out.
In your comments, I wouldn't support that, and I would not support that for the reason that I believe if we can have a thorough discussion and hopefully some revisions to the growth management ordinance to where it will encourage development within the urbanized areas instead of, as it is, just a lottery system, so to speak, where you get in line and you could be in Timbuktu or you can be, you know, Teff Street. That isn't managing growth or managing resources, what we have today, in my opinion. But if the end result is going to be that we really look at a growth management program that emphasizes growth where, in my opinion, it should be and where the resources are available, I think we've gone a long way to solve some of our problems.
I think that's how we get there, is by saying a building moratorium in the rural area.
We just have a different opinion upon which road to take, I think.
I just wonder, though, Mr. Caruso suggested that maybe a way of doing that would be making the growth management ordinance apply only to the rural areas. We have heard, for example, Mr. Greening suggests that maybe there needs to be some kind of ordinance pertaining to the urban areas, that just taking that out of the urban area might not be wise. So staff comments?
Yeah, I think this is certainly one idea that we will be exploring. What we told the board was we will look at a variety of approaches to amending the growth management ordinance. This might be on the table for discussion, and we'll bring those back to the board in a few months to get their direction more specifically on which ones they really want us to dig deep on. So, and bring back with potential ordinance amendments in the following year. We're hoping to have a proposed ordinance package amending the growth management ordinance this time next year. That's our goal.
Okay, because I would like to voice support for some kind of change to encourage the urban development, but maybe still with some kind of caps to...
It's all interesting, but you know, we're talking about Napomo today.
Except we're talking about Napomo today, but if we don't impose or recommend a moratorium here, then if we have no other ideas for what we'd like to see change, then nothing necessarily changes. If we don't have some kind of follow-up ideas that are going to happen and force change, we're going to see the same thing happening time after time and the same problem getting worse.
Well, I'm trying to think ahead to what kind of motion somebody's going to make here, and I see something on the screen here, but I'm having trouble with point number three, discuss a moratorium on high water using development. I have no idea what that means.
Well, we have a recommendation in our staff report.
And I don't have any idea what that one means either, because...
Me, I don't either.
I got... Thank you. I'm not alone here.
No.
I understand point number one. I got that one.
Maybe we should take these and vote on them one by one. Maybe this is several different motions.
It might be wise.
Okay.
Because I think we all agree.
I could support number one. That's for darn sure.
I might suggest that Mr. Caruso try to clarify point by point for you.
Which I have obviously have failed to do. I apologize for that. So in listening to your commission's discussion this morning and this afternoon, let's see if we can try to focus in a little bit better, because these recommendations are general, and it's because this is a difficult issue.
Oh, yeah.
But we can be much more detailed now after listening to the testimony and listening to the commission discussion. Number one is simple. It's the recommendation is to certify that level of severity 3. Number two, require a retrofit program whereby all new development within the Napomo Mesa water conservation area offsets its new water use. That's basically a retrofit program where you would be saving the amount of water you're using by retrofitting X number of homes.
And that
would go throughout... That would go throughout the Napomo Mesa water conservation area.
Cal State, urban, rural.
Right, because that is a program that is based on building permits, not on water purveying. So that's an example of using an authority the county actually has.
And I can support that one too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The third one the chair was discussing the funding of the monitoring wells, recommending that to the board. And then the last thing, which is what you're in the middle of discussion of, is do you want to prohibit new subdivisions everywhere within the water conservation area, some places within the water conservation area, perhaps where a supplemental water fee is not being collected? And I think that would be the staff recommendation. If you want to go to a subdivision moratorium, it would be a moratorium where that fee is not in place, and that moratorium would be understood to be taken off when the fee is in place.
Well, to me, this seems like there's something. For one, I support that. But then going a little bit closer to Ms. Christie's position, to me, we ought to have a subdivision moratorium in the non-urban areas, in the rural areas. But if we didn't, now to waffle a little bit on that, if we didn't go with that, then we have a priority system, as you're talking about in your second point number two here.
Right, but it's not clear how that would work then, that priority system. So
no,
that
I'm not. But you know, if there wasn't commission support for that, I mean, that was something that ought to work.
Let's just see if we can keep it simple, and if we have support for a moratorium on new subdivisions where the fee is not in place, that's why get into a waffly, gray, unclear area? So, I mean, can we take a straw poll?
Okay, I'm for that.
Okay, well, that's three of us at least. So.
How many? Any more?
And the fee is not in place in urbanized areas or non-urbanized areas?
It is not in place outside the community services district.
Are there urbanized areas outside of the community
services?
Yes, there
are.
I will not be supporting the motion or the concept or whatever we're doing.
Okay. Well, sounds like you're with us, but you're not.
You know that I am with you, but you have the, I'm sorry, but you have growth management ordinance sounds like motherhood and apple pie, in my opinion. The program that currently exists in the county today does not manage growth according to according. I know that. So if you want to, quote, manage growth using smart growth principles, you're going to want to encourage development in the urbanized area and not in the rural area.
Except that in this particular case, we heard from the services district that said if you allow these areas, whether they're urbanized or not, to continue to subdivide without imposing that fee, you are eroding the land base that they are counting on to collect the fees from to provide the supplemental water service. So we're not saying that you can
maybe they aren't even areas anywhere within their what their district plans to annex.
Well, this is all within the groundwater.
Well, we're getting two different things.
I mean, this is
I think
all the same water basin. It's
affected helpful to
by
know
the
that
development.
The board agreed that a supplemental water fee would be appropriate for new subdivisions. Our board has said that. It's just that it's not. The AB 1600 fee hasn't been finalized.
It's not in place yet. So this is going to be temporary, and it's going to be, if the board goes with it, it's going to be an incentive for them to get that fee in place that they've already agreed to put in place. It's eminently reasonable, in my opinion.
That's good. We all have opinions. I think I just maybe
in one of these rare times I agree with you, sir.
Hey, that's okay. It appears to me that there are three people who think that this should be included. So if that's the way it is, that's the way it is.
Okay.
Next, do we have any more recommendations from staff?
Mr. Stevenson, do you want to add anything to that?
I don't think so.
Do you want to add something regarding a recommendation regarding changing GMO to help us address these issues?
I don't think we need to.
All right, we're going
to. I don't think we need to at this point. We'll be back to your commission with our recommendations for changes to the growth management ordinance before we go to the board. We'll want the board. I would appreciate your input on those ideas. So we'll be doing. You'll see those. But
And can the staff report include not a lengthy, but a fairly simplistic outline of what the current program is? Because I'm not sure everybody understands it.
Sure.
GMO program.
Sure.
Did we need to include one more action about reporting back in 6 months on the status?
Yes, that would. I think that's important to keep your commission up to date on what's happening here.
So number three, then, is not just to discuss a moratorium. There was some sort of a consensus.
So therefore, there would be no change. And to me, you're right, we shouldn't prohibit that.
That's certainly one example. If you look in your staff report on page 4-7, you can see there's a the page from the county's land use ordinances have been reproduced there that currently exists. And at the very bottom, the sub F1B is our existing land use ordinance provision regarding land divisions within the Napoma Mesa Water Conservation Area. And that's where we assert that we're attempting to develop this fee. It's there that we have the exemption that I'm talking about. The first sentence says, where the estimated non-agricultural water demand resulting from a land division would exceed the existing non-agricultural water demand. That's when the fee is proposed to be applied. And presumably, that would be the basis for any moratoria that would be necessary prior to the development of a fee as well. That's all. I just wanted you to be aware of it.
Thank
I, no
you
one had mentioned
that
it.
Up, Mr. McNulty.
Does it seem like we need to add then to the motion, or we're comfortable that this
I think
classifies
that
enough?
I personally believe that we have existing regulations to handle this, but I have my own opinion, obviously.
I'm comfortable with this, even if it misses a few, if the net demand is controlled.
Question of staff. Are you going with the recommendations you have on the screen, or are you going with what's on 4-4?
Hybrid.
Neither one.
Well, I think this is talking about the moratorium.
Well, the 4 points that you're recommending.
Right, okay. Well, I think it's a hybrid of both of these. Your commission has discussed these options in you're coming up with what's a hybrid of both of these things, and that's actually what staff wanted you to do, was fully discuss these things and decide on one recommendation, and it sounds like you're almost there.
But I think we are going to have to take the recommendations one at a time, because we have unanimity on some, and we have, you know,
right,
a split vote on others. So
would the staff please state the first recommendation?
Certify level of severity 3.
Is there a motion to that statement?
So move.
Second.
It's moved and seconded. Further comment? Roll call, please.
Commissioner Melsko?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Chairperson Penny?
Yes. Would staff please state the second recommendation?
Establish a water retrofit program for all new development within the Napomo Mesa Water Conservation Area.
To fully offset. Wasn't there some discussion about...
Right, if we want it to be more to fully offset the new water use from new development.
Is there a motion to that second recommendation?
Yes, so move.
Second.
Additional comments? Roll call, please.
Commissioner Melsko?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Chairperson Rappin?
Yes. Is there a third recommendation?
Fund the rehabilitation and monitoring of the existing seawater sentry wells.
Is there a motion to that effect?
So move.
Yes. Or second.
Roll call, please.
Commissioner Melsko?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Chairperson Rappin?
Yes. Staff have an additional recommendation?
I'm going to skip one. I'm going to skip down to request that the Napomo Community Services District report back to your commission within 6 months on the status of the supplemental water projects.
Is there a motion on that recommendation?
So move.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Commissioner Melsko?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Sorry. Chairperson Rappa?
Yes. Are there any additional recommendations from staff?
Prohibit new land divisions within outside the urban reserve line that increase the non-agricultural water use of a site.
So move.
Second.
Okay. I thought we were just doing that until fees are in place. Does that not need to be in there? Don't we want that in there, even if we don't really want to be creating, I don't want to be creating this moratorium, but until the fees are in place.
Madam Chair, might I also add that I don't believe James mentioned that the it's really the Napomo Mesa Water Conservation Area as defined on page 4-7 of your staff report that any such restriction would apply. I don't believe it's staff's intention to have it go beyond those bounds.
Well, we meant to add the Napomo Mesa Water Conservation Area, and that's what's in the general plan now. Did I not say that?
We knew
he's being real specific, is he?
Okay.
I like that one.
Is the motion clear?
Would you just repeat it again? Not exactly clear. I don't know. I just would like to see some more come back. So I guess Mr. Stevenson has promised to bring us more back. So I'd encourage that, because if the fees are in place, at least there's some structure there, but this same problem will still continue. Without some change to promote development within the urban area, that we're not seeing now, some encouragement to move more development into the urban area from the rural area.
You've lost me.
Well, we're just, maybe you can help.
I think what Commissioner Wyatt is just reinforcing is the desire on her part and the Commission's part to hear some ideas and recommendations from staff on how the growth management ordinance might be more effective implementing smart growth principles.
Oh, I totally agree with that one.
More or less.
Okay. One little housekeeping or whatever we want to call it. We had asked earlier about the energy summit, and we did receive information, and it is a two-day hearing, or two-day hearing. It is a two-day program, and I believe the commission, did the commission already decide this and I missed it or something?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
Could we get Mr. Rose's attention over here?
I'm trying to, I put that away. I didn't have to read it. Now you're making me read it.
I'm sorry. All right, there is a regional energy plan conference on August 23rd and 24th. We would normally have a planning commission meeting on August 23rd. It has been discussed earlier that we have only one item that could potentially be scheduled for that day. The commission had requested more information about the conference and whether or not we wish to cancel that meeting of August 23rd.
Do you know that Mr. Stevenson is going to be on a panel that day on that at the energy conference? So if that's any attraction to you.
Well, I personally would like to. One, I think that obviously the topic is up front and center. Secondly, I guess it's because of my background, I thoroughly encourage us to network with other commissioners and elected officials and whom all, and this is an opportunity to do that.
We would also encourage your commission to consider going to this because it would be a good, if you will, a study session in preparation for conservation element. And so we'll be hearing a lot of ideas and discussions about policies that might be included in the conservation element as a result of that.
And I'd be in favor for canceling that planning commission meeting, but I just want to clarify, we had discussed at the workshop about the planning commission ourselves holding a workshop about sustainable energy opportunities for San Luis Obispo County, and I'm just hoping that this isn't taking the place of that. This is
no, it would not.
Okay, great. So I'm for canceling the 23rd so that we can attend Mr. Stevenson's panel.
It says on the bottom here of this memo that we were supposed to respond by April 23rd. I'm just reading the memo.
Maybe he'll let us come. James will get us.
Okay.
James will get you in.
So the commission would like to indicate to staff that we would prefer not to have a meeting on the 23rd and that can we be registered for this program?
Yes. Well, yes, James is going to take care of it.
Okay. Is there anything else before us today?
Yes, we need to decide what we want to do with all the materials that we've received related to the public record. And I'm suggesting that perhaps we take them into the public
record. Is there a second?
Second.
Come on in. I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. We are adjourned until our next regular meeting.
Cool. You guys are going to forget that someday.
That'll be
the end of the world.
Invalidated?
I have no idea what
will happen. Where does that fruit come from?
No, not Ted. I think it's back at work.